Good morning, honorable members and officials.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Mama Kate.
Okay, thank you.
How about starting the meeting? Because I can see that most of the people have joined. Morning. To whom am I speaking to?
Letaj.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much for joining us. Good. I'm happy that you have joined. Can we start the meeting then? It's 9 o'clock. I'm worried. The honorable members have joined me. Yoli has joined.
Why drugs lie about it?
There are how many co-hosts? There are three of them. Fulau, David, Zenzi. And then I can see honorable members have joined. Let's start the meeting. I can see that at least we are 37, and I see the honorable members. I see the whip. I see honorable Masango. Jalon. We'll get the introduction when we open. Let's just bow our heads for a minute or seconds just to start the meeting. Amen. Thank you very much. Amen. Honorable members, you are disturbing the meeting. I just want to officially open the meeting and wish to greet everyone in the meeting and welcome everyone in the meeting. And I know for a fact that we have been joined by Home Affairs Department. I also wish to welcome them, but we have not to waste time today. This meeting needs to be out by at least 12:30 for that 1 o'clock. So there are two presentations today, which we are very happy that they have managed to join us, but they will introduce themselves. I'll give an opportunity for us to
recording in progress.
Who is assisting? I understand that Lindy is on study leave. Who is assisting us? Yoli, who's assisting us?
Morning, sir. Miss Hanim David.
Okay.
Yeah. Hanim, can you please assist?
Magavele.
Yeah, I show your face, Hanim, and introduce yourself to the members.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Hanim David. I'm assisting the committee today, standing in for my travel.
Okay, thank you very much, Hanim. Good to have you in our meeting. Thank you very much for your indulgence and your assistance for the committee. Then, Hanim, can you tell us who is in the meeting from the side of SOCDEF?
I'm not sure about the attendance for the department. But I have the attendance for the members and the apologies.
Hanim, I'm talking about the members, the ones that are present. Or can we do this way? We request the honorable members to introduce themselves so as to know one another in the meeting. Myself is Nonkosi Mvana, Can I get anyone from social development to introduce herself and show her face or his face? Thank you. Next.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Alexandra Abrams. Thank you.
Hi, Khoji. Thank you, Khoji. The next one.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone in the meeting. My name is Bridget Masango. I'm the member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Thank you, Chair.
Teaspoon. Thank you. The next one.
Morning, colleagues. I'm Honorable Liesel van der Merwe, a member of this Portfolio Committee.
Hi, Liesel. Thank you. The next one.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. My name is Dihang Stok. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Stok, whip of us.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Honorable Letitia Aris, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Good morning.
Yo, new spectacles for 2022. Good morning. The next one, I know that Honorable Mutaung is also present. Over to you, Honorable Member. Show your face.
Good morning. My name is Polita Marie. I am the new Portfolio Committee member from the EFF.
Thank you. Thank you. You are?
Yes.
You are?
Paulita Marie. My name is Paulita Marie and I'm from the EFF, the new committee member.
Thank you very much, Marie. Welcome, 2022 Social Development Committee. The next one, the last. In fact, two last. Where is Meteen and Honorable Mutaung? Make it snappy, Honorable Members. Okay. Seemingly they are not there. For now, they are not ready to introduce themselves. Can we then request the Department of Home Affairs to introduce themselves? Quickly.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to all the members of the Portfolio Committee of Social Development. My name is Njabulo Nzuza. I am the Deputy Minister for Home Affairs. Today here, I am with the Director General for Home Affairs, Mr. Tommy Makode. I will request that he turns on his video so that we can see him. There he is. And I am also with Mr. Thomas Sikama, who is the DDG responsible for civic services. I will request Mr. Sikama to also turn on his video. There is Mr. Sikama. That is the team from the Department of Home Affairs at the high level. Thank you very much, Chair.
Welcome, DM. We are happy to be with you in this meeting. You are all welcome, DM. Thank you very much for that. Can we get to the honorable members that are here from Home Affairs? Are there any? None. No honorable members have joined us from the department. Can I get indication, honey? No one. Okay, it's fine. Can we give over to the officials from SOCDEF? Over to you, Acting DG Clinton. Am I talking alone? Thank you. Honorable members, am I audible?
You are audible, Chairperson.
Where are you, Chairperson? Thank you very much, Honorable members. Where are the officials from social development? LinkedIn. Introduce your team.
Sorry, guys, Yolis are here. I don't see them, Chair. I only see Sabina Chapulosa, who is a special advisor to the minister. Let me just find out from Mrs. Lindiwe if I'm able to get hold of her. Maybe she knows why.
Just check with them. But okay. We are not going to waste. Whenever you get the answer, you can just raise your hand and inform us what has happened. DM, hope you are ready with your team. Time is expensive. I know for a fact that you are supposed to join other things. Can we give over to you for political briefing or whatever that you think you have to share with us?
No, thank you very much, Chair, once again. On the 15th of February, we received the request from the Portfolio Committee to come here today to make a presentation in response to the issues that we raised during the public hearings on the Children's Amendment Act. I think we have been here before to make contributions, but subsequently, I believe the portfolio ran a process through public hearings, and as such, there were issues that were raised, and that is why we are here today. In the main, those issues have to deal with the rights of unmarried fathers towards the registration of their children, and the prohibition of child marriages, which is in line with our proposed new marriage policy, as well as issues relating to undocumented South Africans and non-South African children, which is mostly referred to as statelessness, as well as the Association of International Adoption to Human Trafficking. I must say that as a department, we have the responsibility of issuing documents, but also issuing them to people that are allowed by law to have those documents. We also have a responsibility to balance issues of security of our nationals vis-a-vis the interests that they have themselves. And also, we're requested to deal with the issue of long queues and some of the efficiency issues on how we manage Home Affairs. We've since prepared the presentation, Chair, to respond on the issues that have been raised, and also to give clarity on how we are handling those issues towards their resolution. I would just like to take three high-level issues and to give perspective on them. The first one is around the issue of citizenship. And I just wanted to make this point clearly before we get to the presentation. That in South Africa, for a person or a child to qualify for citizenship, they follow the status of their parents, which means if one of their parents is a South African citizen, then a child does qualify for South African citizenship. And we then give the necessary documentation, starting from the birth certificate, ultimately an identity document, and we process them as such. So I'm making this statement because they sometimes believe that once a child is born in South Africa, then that child qualifies automatically for citizenship. What we'll normally do is to issue what we call a notice of birth for the country of that child to then register child, but basically you must have a parent who is a South African, or you must have been born out of a South African parent, whether the mother or father, for you to become a South African child. But then the presentation will then enter into those matters in more detail. In the Department of Home Affairs is in the process of changing the marriage our marriage policy regime. It's gone through some of the committees of cabinet, and it's going to be going through to cabinet now for final approval and consideration. Of relevant for the purposes of this meeting is that the policy will formally banish child marriages, which means in no circumstances will child marriages be allowed subsequent to the approval of the policy. There is an issue which has been a standing pain on us, the issue of the long queues that people suffer from our department. It is a really painful thing that we are dealing with, and I would like to assure the committee that almost every day, just 2 days ago, we are having meetings to look at ways of resolving those issues. Our approach is a two-way approach. One, it is about technology and network architecture on how do we improve our systems, but also it is also has to do with how we handle the queues when they come into our offices and how we train our staff to act in a responsible manner and find ways to manage those particular queues. Part of the things that we are trialing now, which is now at a feasibility stage, we are running it through some of our branches, is the appointment system, which is now up and running, but is still on pilot. That will ease the issue of queues by making sure that clients are able to book appointments before they come to our system, before they come to our offices. Now, the other issue is around the rights of fathers. We are aware of the court judgment that has been issued, and I think the presentation will delve much on how we are implementing that particular resolution. Well, in registering a child, it has become much easier for mothers because obviously there are no internal control systems that will have to come with a mother registering the birth of her child, particularly at our health offices. But we have had difficulties when it comes to fathers in as far as internal control mechanisms and fraud is concerned, which really required us to then set up a prerequisite issues like the DNA test and so on. Because you will know that for a mother, if they've given birth to a child, if there are fraudulent activities that come with it, already the natural internal control mechanism kicks into place where you will find the mother, they will say, no, in a year or within a period of 3 months, I've given birth to 2 children. Then you can immediately detect that as fraud. But it has sort of become difficult when it comes to fathers, and that is why we have to introduce those particular internal control measures. I just thought I should just bring some perspective on those three high-level issues and then request DDG Sigama to then take us through the presentation. The Director General will then end after Mrs. Sigama has taken us through the presentations. After that, will then be in your hands, Chair. Through you, I will then allow Mrs. Sigama to take us through the presentation, Chair.
Thank you, DM, very much. At least you have just paved the way on where are we going to. But let's give over to that particular person to do that presentation. Thank you very much. The only thing that I have forgotten is to acknowledge the department, Justice Department. Seemingly they have already joined us. And I'm happy to see that also from social development, Ms. Isabel has just joined us. Otherwise, I was very angry with them. Thank you very much. And we are going to give time to Justice to introduce themselves when they are going to present. Can we give over to that relevant person that DM has spoken about? Thanks. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Thanks very much, Honorable Members. Thanks very much, DM. Yes, my name is Thomas Sigama. I will be doing the presentation. I'll request that the presentation be flighted on slide mode. Yeah, thanks. On my presentation, I'll cover the purpose. I'll deal with the vision, mission, and value statement of the Department of Home Affairs. I'll also have to make sure that I deal with the mandate of Home Affairs, our legislative framework, the issues that we raised during the public hearings as outlined by the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs this morning. And amongst others, we have noted that we were requested to deal with issues of unmarried fathers and not allowed to register their children, prohibition of children marriages or being allowed to for children who wish to get married, expensive paternity tests, DNA, which are not affordable for to many fathers, especially those unemployed, undocumented South African and non-South African children, delays in certifying adoption applications, and end to the Association of International Adoption to Human Rights for Trafficking, and the long queues and inefficiencies at Home Affairs as outlined by the Deputy Minister this morning. Lastly, we'll then deal with the recommendations. The purpose of the presentation, Chair, is to present the Portfolio Committee on Social Development responses to the issues raised during the public hearings on Children's Amendment Bill. Then, in terms of the vision, which I think most of us know are aware of, but let me just make sure that I reiterate that. In terms of the vision, it's a South Africa where identity, status, and citizenship are key enablers of citizen and empowerment and inclusivity, economic development, and national security. Our mission, as indicated, the DHA carries out its mission in line with its commitments to citizen empowerment and inclusivity, economic development, and national security by being an efficient and secure custodian of citizenship and civil registration, and also by securely and strategically managing international migration, and also by efficiently managing asylum seekers and refugees, and lastly, by efficiently determining and safeguarding the official identity and status of persons. So our value statement, as you can see, we are really people-centered and caring. We are patriotic, professional and showing leadership, effective, efficient and innovative, ethical and having integrity, security conscious, and as well as the development oriented. In terms of the mandate of Home Affairs, I think this is key for all of us. I was saying that DHA services are divided into two broad categories. The first one is that of civic services, where we service people out there, and you'll see that most of our outlets there are full of people. And the second one is immigration, where we also deal with refugees. First mandate is management of citizenship and death. Civil registration. Second mandate is to do with management of international migration, while the third mandate has to do with the management of refugee protection. The next slide, which is a slide that deals with the legislation and policies, I won't go through all of them, but I'll only zoom to those that are specific to the discussion today. Of course, the first one has to deal with the Constitution of the Republic, because we are all really rally around the same constitution. So the Birth and Death Act, Act number 51 of 1992 is key together with its regulations and the various types of marriages. Firstly, we have to deal with the Civil Marriage Act number 25 of 1961. We have to deal with the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, which Act number 120 of 1998. And the last one being the Civil Union Act, which is Act number 17 of 2006. So the rest, indeed, is a package that supports us to administer the main legislation. And of course, on the second page, we have to deal with the Identification Act. When a person has to apply for documents, when you have to amend, to rectify, we have to consider that. And the one that follows, I think DM has articulated on that act at length, colleagues. I don't want to bore you much on that, which is Citizenship Act with its amendments. And really, the bone of contention here is the first point where it's requested to respond on the first item that has to deal with unmarried fathers not allowed to register their children. This is one area, Chair, which is being administered through the, in terms of the Birth and Death Act, which is Act number 51 of 1992 as amended. And indeed, if we were to zoom into Section 9, that then gives notice to, it gives rise to us to make sure that we register birth within a particular date, which is Section 9 of the Birth and Death Act, which then gives rise to us to make sure that we then make sure that anyone then who gives birth has to make sure that the birth is registered within 30 days. And that notice, as prescribed, if we don't do that, indeed, there could be additional information required. And then Section 10, I think the one that also then gives rise to the notice of birth of children out of wedlock. That's this is the area wherein indeed the department was taken to court, and we were then challenged in that manner. And it reads as follows. It says the notice of birth of a child born out of wedlock shall be given under the surname of a mother or at the joint request of the mother and the person who, in the presence of the person to whom the notice of birth was given, acknowledges himself in writing to be the father of the child and enters the prescribed particulars regarding himself upon notice of birth under the surname of the person who has so acknowledged. That's the area wherein indeed the court indeed took a decision to say this matter is declared unconstitutional. And the department was then, under the second page, we were also requested to make sure that we go back and then make sure that we revise that particular area. So the department has since implemented the order in its practices and currently receives and the practices application made by the unmarried fathers without consent of the mothers. So the department, in view of the judgment, is currently effecting the necessary changes on the act itself. However, when see through this judgment, we are now allowing fathers to then bring their children for registration. As DM also indicated earlier, there are controls that are put in place. We have to then look into the regulation and make sure that we get really the real fathers to come forward and they then bring proof so that we then register their children as per the act. So the next one that we were requested to work on was on slide 10, which is prohibition of child marriages or being allowed to register as a wish. So that's an area which is also within our civil marriages. And maybe one can just go back and indicate that, as you are aware, the department is administering three types of marriages. The first one is the civil marriage, which is Act No. 25 of 1961. And we also have the cognition of customary marriages, which is Act No. 120 of 1998. We also have the last one, which is the Civil Union Act, which is Act No. 17 of 2006. So in this case, we are referring to the Civil Marriage Act, which is Act No. 25 of 1961, which also makes provision of a minor child to marry as contemplated in that particular act, and we had to zoom into specific sections. And here we are referring to Section 24 of the Civil Marriage Act, wherein it deals with marriages of minors and provides that no marriage officer shall solemnize a marriage between parties of whom one or both are minors unless the consent of the party or parties which is legally required for a purpose of contracting the marriage has been granted and finished to him in writing. We also then pay attention to Section 24.2, wherein we're saying that within the very same marriage act, it provides a definition for purposes of Subsection 24, Subsection 1 of a minor, and this states that a minor does not include a person who is under the age of 21 and previously contracted a valid marriage which has been dissolved by death or divorce. So those are the sections that we have zoomed in, and we were saying under those, children marriages really will not be allowed except where they are concerned. But as you are aware, the slide that follows, the department is in the process of really working on a marriage policy, as the Deputy Minister has indicated. And indeed, we are reviewing some of these sections. And once the marriage policy is concluded, we will be able then to share all those sections and also make sure that all those issues that were raised before are now revised or removed completely within the marriage regime itself. So Section 26 also pays reference to the same area that I've just spoken to. But what is more important is item number 3, which is the last one, where it says, if the minister so directs, it shall be deemed that he granted written permission to such marriages prior to the solemnization thereof. So if there are minor children that wish to get married, they have to get consent, and those documents have to be referred to minister for minister to then direct us on whether those marriages should be allowed or not. So that's the situation as it stands. But the next slide, as I've indicated, it deals with the current practices and the changes that we are about to bring to towards the marriage, the entire marriage regime, wherein we're saying that the department is currently in a process of developing a marriage policy. And in this regard, the policy advocates for the prohibition of child marriages in line with South African's international obligation. So those areas are at the advanced stages. We had public hearings recently. The white paper has been drafted. So we are really in at a place, at a level where we think come 2022, 2023 financial year, we should be able to share the new policy around marriages. So the issue around the DNA test, as it was requested from the department, indeed, this one area which is administered through the Birth and Death Act, which is Act Number 51 of 1992. But if we pay particular attention to Section 7 of the same Act, that section then empowers the Director General with a duty to verify, supplement, and rectify information as contained in the National Population Register. This is very important because if you then look at this and also make reference to Section 9, then wherein we then require the child to be registered within 30 days, then this section just supports to say, in case the mother or the parent was not able to then register within that particular day, those particular days, then the parents may then, the Director General may then request additional information or certain documents to supplement whatever information that the parents may bring. And thereafter, then the Director General may require a person who has finished any particulars in terms of this act to finish the Director General with the proof of the correctness of such particulars. So that's where now the conclusive proof of paternity will have to be required as additional information. But if you have registered that birth within 30 days, then the conclusive proof of paternity is not required. So that's the most important aspect. And where the birth is registered after 30 days, then the rule Section 7 kicks in, wherein conclusive proof of paternity may be required. This is dependent on the circumstances of a particular case and where there are doubts. So we don't apply this across the board, but there are cases where you find that the parent is not giving us sufficient information. That's where then we keep on requesting more information so that we can be sure that the child which is being entered into the National Population Register is a legitimate child. And we have to make sure that indeed we keep our population register intact. And where there is doubt and when the parent is not providing us with sufficient information, that's the area where we then request that they then provide us with additional information in a form of DNA. So we urge all parents to register their children within 30 days to avoid all those documentation or supplementation for before the child could be registered. So the next question was around the undocumented South African and non-South African children. That's the area where indeed the department, together with the Department of Basic Education in particular, specific schools, they assist parents to register birth who are not in possession of birth certificate. As you are aware, Chairperson, both the Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Basic Education have entered into a memorandum of understanding, wherein we've got programs throughout the year to make sure that when before the schools reopen, we then enter into that particular program and have a window where we allow if any person whose birth has never been registered then to come to the fore so that before they enter into the schools, then they have that certificate. We also have a program throughout the year which deals with learners that are about to write matric, wherein we run through all the schools to make sure that we collect the applications and before they sit for the exams, we have to make sure that they all have their identity documents before they sit for the examination. So that's one area where if there's anyone who's not documented, we focus into that project and we have to make sure that we then give those that would deserve documentation to make sure that they are also registered in the National Population Register. The second part has to deal with undocumented and non-South African children. This is part of the immigration function, colleagues, wherein the Immigration Act number 13 of 2002 then regulates the issuance of visas and permits to reside in South Africa. The Immigration Act further requires any person, including a child, to be in possession of a visa or a permit. So my colleague will also add more flesh on that, because as per the education policy, we don't the policy does not allow us to expel children at school, but they always encourage that they then get proper documentation so that their stay in the country can be regularized. So immigration policy then kicks in, and the department, together with the Department of Basic Education in particular, then assist those parents to obtain the necessary visas to enable the child to continue with schooling. And where the child is found to be in need of care, as contemplated in the Children's Act, the department refers such a child to the Department of Social Development. Then there was also a question around the delays in certifying adoption applications. And we thought here, maybe, Chair, we need just to outline the process so that the honorable members, including the Chair, can understand how we run this process. So we are saying that the process to be followed when noting adoption is as follows. We expect adoptive parents to visit the nearest Office of Home Affairs to submit the application documents. In this case, we are referring to the adoption order, the report by social workers, and once all those documents are finished, the department, we then look at the validity of those documents, we verify them, and immediately after that, we enter the details into the National Population Register, and the output or the product becomes a birth certificate. Then when we're dealing with all these aspects, we have to make sure that the validity of the information finished is correct, and we also have to make sure that all the parents who are included on the order are also verified with the respective departments, and in this case, it's our social development as well as justice. And once everything is verified, we then allocate a new ID number and then issue them with the so-called unabridged birth certificate. So the turnaround time for finalizing the in-application and noting of an adoption, it takes 6 to 8 weeks. So if all documents are in order and all verification has been performed properly, we then make sure that we register and issue documentation within a period of 8 weeks. However, in the process, Chair, we encounter a lot of challenges. And amongst others, this include the incomplete documentation that are received from adoptive parents. And when we then follow up with them, they take time to come back to us. And that also delays the process. Verification of submitted documents, since we are working with other sister departments, also takes a bit of time to get feedback. And lastly, the retrieval of our original birth records also takes a bit of time. You may have noted that Minister recently also spoke about the digitization of paper records. This is solely because most of the records that have to be used to verify the parents are in the paper form, and that requires us to run to our archive go and search for those records prior to the noting of such adoptions. So those are the challenges in summary, Chairperson. And then the next issue was around an end to the Association of International Adoption of to Human Trafficking. So here, I don't want to say much because the process largely follows what I've just indicated before. But as I've indicated before, the department processes in relation to registering adoption are based on the adoptive parent submitting the adoption order, as well as the adoption registrar and social development. So they have to follow the same process. We have to make sure that we verify with our department to make sure that whatever document that has been submitted are the correct documents. And only when everything is in place, then we had to make sure that we enter those documents and hand them over to our immigration colleagues to look into some of their documents that are required. So any delays on the part of DSA affect the timer's registration of the orders. So I don't want to dwell much because we also have our own meetings to try and check whether there are challenges on the other side. But we have also picked up that indeed the same challenges that are experienced on the side of adoption, it's also the same challenges that we are experiencing on the side of immigration, wherein really we do receive incomplete documentation, delays in verifying documents, as well as the retrieval of the original records so that the child can be registered properly in our National Population Register. then the long queues elements are those are the issues that DM I think has already touched on them. And as we have indicated in our problem statement, we're saying that the long enduring queues emanating from high client volumes caused by front office space. You might have seen some of our offices that are very small, they're not able to accommodate majority of the clients that are visiting us. Issues around unstable systems, our networks and applications. I think this is something that is also causing problems on our side. The inefficient workflow processes and uncoordinated communication strategies, particularly when our offices are offline. You'll find that at times there are delays in terms of communicating that we're offline, or also to inform clients how long it will take us to really get back online. So this really gets to unsatisfied clients, which contribute to negative publicity, denting the image of the department. So amongst others, those are some of the factors. We are also having problems with capacity, efficient management of queues, concurrent running of manual and automated systems, the uneven distribution of offices based on demographics. I think we all know our history. Most of our offices are centered in urban areas, but less in rural offices. However, we're also putting mobile units to make sure that we deal with the ills of the past. So the misinformation, poor signage, and lack of floor management is something that we're working on. So in terms of system challenges, Chair, I think Deputy Minister had alluded to some of those, wherein even previously, I think yesterday and last week, we experienced really, really severe or serious network downtime. So surely one of the issues that really exacerbates the problem along those lines is the power supply. First one being the load shedding, our UPS, which is not up and running, generators that are also in offices, but sometimes find that they're not working. And the second one is about cable theft and vandalizing colleagues, wherein when you wake up in the morning, you get to the office, find that the cable that then terminates networks towards the office, find that it's really stolen, and that also caused problems. The also aging of equipment, and there are some of the issues that we need to deal with internally. So, but to really summarize, the system challenges are really due to network downtime. And we are also working closely with our CETA department to make sure that they help us in upgrading some of the areas that are really having a dilapidated network equipment. So it's really CETA is really helping colleagues so that we then resolve the problem. And we are saying as part of the upgrade and also part of the agreement with CETA, they are saying that they will also assist us in upgrading most of the switching centers. As you are aware, at times you find that when you are the Botford view, when it's down, it affects the north, Mpumalanga, and some of the surrounding offices. So those are some of the things that CETA committed to work with us, and the expansion of CETA core network in order to reduce regional network outages. And lastly, is the exploring alternative services and service providers, wherein we are now, as you are aware, we've got about 100 mobile units that are out there, and they are deployed countrywide. And we're also saying we really need to add more so that we then also take services to people rather than for clients to come to our offices. So those are some of the things that we are dealing in terms of the networks. So operationally, as you recently, the department really had serious challenges where we were inundated with high volume of clients that came. So we then looked into the high volume offices, wherein we then came up with a strategy to address the areas where we don't have managers. And that really had to assist us because we just received approval from National Treasury, wherein they then gave us additional funding so that we then try and then fill those spaces in areas where we don't have enough managers. Then we're saying that also front office space that are not purpose-built. And we're saying we're also using our mobile units to make sure that they assist with collection. So we've configured them. So you'll find that we park a mobile right in front of the office so that that mobile units assist us in terms of collections. We have also now looked into some of the provinces wherein we've demarcated our offices so that we have spaces on solely for collections. For example, you go to Mthatha office right now, you see that we've demarcated our office in Mthatha, wherein applications are separated from collections. So when you collect, you go to a different venue, but when you apply, you go somewhere. So that helps us in terms of segregating our queues. Gauteng, you go to Randburg, it's the same. As you enter, it will be one queue, but when you are inside, there is the premise. We decided to split it into two. You've got a group where if you are to collect, you go to a certain area, and there's an area for application. Same applies to Polokwane office, Western Cape, but Randburg. And that those are some of the things that we're trying to bring to the fore so that we then segregate our clients as and when they come and collect their documents. So we are also encouraging our officials out there to open offices earlier so that we cater for learners, that those learners can then go back to school as early as possible, the elderly as well as people with disabilities. Then we have also make sure that we separate queues while you're inside according to products. If you are to apply for smart card, you see there's a separate queue. If you are to apply to collect for your passport, you see. If you are to register the birth of the young ones, which we encourage most of the parents to then register them in the most health facilities, then there's also a separate space for them. So both birth and death, really, we encourage parents to then go to our health facilities to register them so that then we avoid stampede and long queues in our front offices. Then the last one has to deal with the issues around infrastructure and footprint expansion, where I've also indicated that we have got about 100 mobile units and two of those are now dysfunctional, but we have procured additional 10 mobile units so that we then lessen really the stampede or the influx in our front offices. So then we have planned to make sure that the 10 additional mobiles are distributed before the end of this financial year. And as part of the outreach programs, most of the colleagues from DSD are aware, we always invite them to our outreach programs so that they will join hands. Then you see that we utilize our mobile units to assist clients so that they don't have to visit our front offices. So that it's always implemented in far-flung areas. This week and last week, we were in Western Cape, and we had to stay there the whole week to make sure that we clean out those clients who never had an opportunity to visit our offices. So that's a year-long kind of program wherein we move around provinces to make sure that we then allow clients to come and apply or collect their documents without necessarily visiting our offices. Then last but not least, Chairperson, we are now piloting the so-called booking system, wherein we then allow our clients to enter into our website. You see there's an icon which says booking system. Then they choose the slot, which will then indicate the date, the time in which they'll come and collect their documents or apply for their documentation. And once it's secured, we have now introduced dedicated lines at our front office so that those who have made some pre-bookings, they just go straight to that queue, make their collection or apply because they've done some work before. At the moment, we have piloted it in 8 out of the 24 offices that were identified by the branch civic services. And we are also using the 28 banks that are out there because those ones indeed, they've been on pilot for some time, but they are also capable and are able to then allow clients to perform some bookings. And from time to time, we are also receiving messages that indeed the system does work at the banks and most of the clients are being assisted at that level. So I think this brings me to the end of my presentation, and it is recommended, Chair, that the Portfolio Committee on Social Development takes note of the report as presented. Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Oh, thank you very much for the presentation. I would like to get from the committee members, how do they like the presentations? Do we want to continue with Home Affairs, with Justice, or do we want to discuss about this, the one of Home Affairs, and then followed by Justice? Can I get the indication how the committee wants us to?
Okay.
Yes.
Chair, I think we must discuss the presentation and then continue with the next one.
must discuss his presentation. That's the proposal.
Yes, seconded, Chairperson.
Seconded by Honorable Lizelle. Okay. Now I can see a string of hands. Let's get into the discussions. Otherwise, thank you very much for the presentation on Home Affairs. Thank you, TM. Now, there are things that are a little bit clearer, but we do have questions. Can I then give the hands that I see? I see Honorable Aris, Honorable Masango, followed by Masango, and Honorable Lizelle is the third one, and Honorable Stock, then Honorable Alex. There's also Honorable Opperman, and then Honorable Mshongo. Honorable Mshongo, I don't see other ones. I will give them chance if they want also to engage with the presentation. Thank you very much. Can we give the first hand?
Yeah, Harry? Thank you very much. Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, to the Department of Home Affairs. Thanks for the presentation. I think, Chair, where do we did have the public hearings with the children that did come physically to Parliament, there was this young child that was in the country for all her life. She did go to school in the country. She did enjoy all the rights and the benefits that children in the country receive. But in the meantime, her uncle or something did pass away. But a problem has started once she has turned 18. Because that child, the only country that and the only home that she know was South Africa. And I want to know from the department, because then that child couldn't apply for an ID document, but she's been in the country all her life. How are the department going to deal with this children that are in the country all their life, that don't know any other country, they are like citizens in this country, how are they going to deal with that? And then the other thing that I would also like to ask the department, I've seen recently that there's 180,000 Zimbabweans that face deportation. Again, it goes back to those Zimbabweans that have children in this country. How will they deal with their children? Because their children are in the schools of South Africa, etc. And I want to know, if they deport the parents, how will they deal with these children that are attending our schools? And then, Chair, there's another issue in terms of the children that is outside adoption, outside the borders of this country. Again, I want to find out from the department that what if their children, you know, are not happy with their adopted parents? Is they And will the children forfeit their South Africa citizenship, and how will they deal with that? And then, Chair, there's one issue that I am the Department of Home Affairs in Nelspruit. I want to state it, and I want to say it on record, it's pathetic, because we have a situation that we are dealing with. I've even sent it to the minister's office, where a person is really struggling just to get a simple thing like birth certificates for his children. He did go through paternity tests. He did go through whatever. And the arrogance of the manager of that office is saying that I'm working 27 years at this department, and no one will say to me or tell me or touch me. It is a total unacceptable situation. And this person is being sent from pillar to post. And we really need to look urgently into that matter. This person is a South African citizen, but he has dual citizenship, and now they are just having these ball games just because, you know, we have take this issue up with the Minister of Home Affairs office. And then there's another issue that I would
say. The last one.
I want to know how they will strengthen the services specifically in the provinces that is close to the borders of South Africa, because that is where
the most, because they must give us a plan on how they will strengthen their services, because that is where the most undocumented children are. And then I just want to ask, find out the court find, there was a groundbreaking court, what do you call it now? There was a groundbreaking case in the High Court of Pretoria, where they say that unmarried lesbian couples brought a case to the High Court, which resulted to a groundbreaking judgment. I want to know that those parents that have, that both people in a relationship in which children is conceived through artificial insemination should have legal parental rights. I want to know from the department, since the department allow a biological father and mother to be, accepted as parents, how will they deal with this situation? Because right now, both parents that will raise their child are legal, has been seen as legal parents, but that child also has a biological father. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Aris. I should have not started by you. Honorable members that will follow my same copy what you have done. Comrade Master, Honorable Masango, followed by Honorable Lizel.
Thank you, Chair. May I please not put my video on? I seem to be struggling with the connection. I just want to thank the Department of Home Affairs for this presentation, which has actually made it very clear that we have more challenges than we have, than we are able to make sure that the North Gauteng High Court judgment is expedited to make sure that the foster care crisis is dealt with. Chairperson, I don't have many questions at all, but to me it seems like the laws or even the regulations are in place to ensure that everything is done according to what needs to. Okay, I was saying that it seems like the laws are in place and the Department of Home Affairs has done everything in its power to make sure that it works according to the laws of this country in terms of birth and death registration and everything else that it needs to do. But for me, it looks like the operationalization of the law and its regulations is a huge challenge. For example, Chair, the one question I want to raise is that we still have parents, adoptive parents that is, that claim that the department's turnaround time of 6 to 8 weeks for the birth certificates to be issued is not in place at the moment. There are those that wait up to 3 years for their children's birth certificates to be issued, which then is a problem, again, because you need the birth certificate for the foster care orders to be issued and even for adoption for that matter. So we are in a catch-22 situation where we're trying to use the bill, to amend the bill, to facilitate processes, but it looks like the challenges that are faced that Mr. Sigama outlined earlier on are so overwhelming that we may have done a good job in the amendment of the bill, but when it comes to the front line, to when this law is being operationalized, we are still going to experience a lot of challenges, and as a result, foster care crisis will not be averted as a result. And Chair, also, I would like to just say that the adoption is taking longer and it is harder for the adoptive parents because of these challenges, and also want to find out from the Department of Home Affairs if this presentation is based on the issues that were raised in during the provincial hearings, or it is based on the entire public hearings, national and provincial, and actually also if the department has also referred to the amended bill, as it were, to see what sections actually are talking to the Department of Home Affairs and their role in the facilitation of the foster care in South Africa. Thank you so much, Chair.
Honourable Lizelle, followed by Honourable Stock.
Thank you, Mklonishwa, Mama Chairperson. Thank you very much, and greetings to our colleagues, and also to my colleagues from the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, where I also serve as a member. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I will try to be brief. Firstly, I heard Mr. Sigama saying that the Department of Home Affairs is now implementing the NAKI and CCL court judgments pertaining to fathers being able to register their children, but that is unfortunately not the situation currently on the ground. And I would like to also just remind the Department of Home Affairs that even in our last meeting last week, Honourable Ruiz even mentioned the fact that when he went to a Home Affairs office to register his daughter, he was unable to do so, and that was within the first 30 days. He was told that they're not aware that this is the case, and so fathers are being told that they need paternity tests as a default response in all cases, not in specific cases, as Mr. Sigama said. And the problem here is that the Constitutional Court specifically said that imposing paternity tests will impose unacceptable barriers. So my question for Home Affairs: have you issued a directive to your officials informing them of the court judgment and explaining how they should practically implement this court judgment? If so, I want to know whether we can be furnished as a committee with that directive so that we can be informed about what is in the directive. Because the problem is that requiring paternity tests for unmarried fathers, you know, when they're South Africans, really do impose barriers, considering that they are required to pay upwards from 2,000 rand, and it's not possible in all cases. I did hear recently that the Department of Home Affairs might be offering free paternity tests, and I just wanted an indication in that regard as well. Chairperson, I would like to know, with teenage mothers, we've got a high prevalence of teenage pregnancies, and I would like to know, why does the Department of Home Affairs not allow mothers without IDs to register their baby's birth using their own birth certificates and that 13-digit number on the birth certificate? Because it is the same number that will eventually be part of their IDs when their IDs are finalized. On the issue of orphaned and abandoned children, I want to know that under what circumstances can a relative apply for the late registration of birth of the child? And what section of the Act are we basing that on? And then, you know, I want to go lastly to this very issue of, and I did mention this in our portfolio committee when we met with Home Affairs recently, that, you know, I think the Department of Home Affairs, I wonder if they really recognize the crisis that we are facing, because in all of those provinces that we went to, Chairperson, it was almost like it wasn't the Department of Social Development or the Portfolio Committee of Social Development visiting those areas. All the issues people were raising were about Home Affairs. It was about the long queues. It was about officers not being responsive to the needs of our people. And most importantly, in all of those provinces that we visited, the outcry was about undocumented children. And in most instances, close to the border, DG and Deputy Minister, people are talking about undocumented children from illegal foreign nationals who are within those communities, and they are roaming the streets, and those were the words of people who came to the hearings, roaming the streets, they're not being looked after, they're not in school, that don't have proper documentation. And I often speak to the department about what I deem as an immigration crisis in our country. And I would like to know what is the plan? What is, because Mrs. Sigama says those parents must come forward to be documented. But in most cases, those parents don't qualify for documents, which means also their children won't qualify for documents. So then at the end of the day, it becomes an issue where we can't just say we notify in the country of birth that a child is within our borders, because we need a plan in terms of how we will address the issue of illegal migration, undocumented migrants, because at the end of the day, it is a crisis and we need a plan. And I want to know what the department's plan is. And finally, before I step off, I want to just support Honorable Aris on the issue of the Nelspruit office. Honorable Aris and I have, for the better part of last year, been trying to assist a client with getting birth certificates, a South African man who wants birth certificates for his children. And really the hostility and the unhelpfulness that emanates from that office has really been quite traumatizing, I must say that. And then finally, I just wanted to ask the department if they can tell us how many banks currently offer home affairs services. Thank you for your indulgence, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Rizal. The next one is Honorable Stock.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues to appreciate the presentation, which was quite detailed and comprehensive by the Department of Home Affairs. But I must also, again, to a large extent, agree with those who are saying it looks like we've got more challenges than solutions. Honorable Chairperson, I've got just I think about three issues that I want to raise, which I want maybe the department to clarify us on such issues. The first one is that, for an example, a child who was born out of a marriage between two foreign nationals, or, okay, let's say if these two foreign nationals are not married, a child who was born out of that relationship, a parental relationship, a child born out of that relationship. Does the child qualify for, to be protected by the Children's Act, or does the child also, for foster care grants and all of that? If the department can just clarify us that. And there are situations as well that maybe, for an example, you find there's one foreign national and then there's one South African, they're involved in a relationship, and out of that, there's a child born there. What happens in that situation? One foreign national, one South African, in such instances, what happens there? And then my second issue, Honorable Chairperson, is that the 30-day registration, that the child must be registered within 30 days. I think the department must be able to maybe look at it and then indicate as to how the situation is practical. For an example, coming to the rural areas, where in the Eastern Cape, throughout the provinces, and then most of the people that came there from the rural areas of KZN, Eastern Cape, the Northwest, and so forth, they were coming and saying, like for an example, someone goes to a hospital to go and give birth to a child, and then that person must be able to register the child within 30 days. Sometimes it becomes problematic because the hospital where the child was born, and I know, I've noted in the presentation, Mr. Sigama said, 30 days, and then there's a local registration person at each and every hospital. Now, that thing is not practical because, Mr. Sigama, I want to challenge you in this fashion. Like, for an example, I was deployed to one constituency without mentioning the name. In that hospital, there's no one that has been allowed there, or maybe there's no registration process or registration facility from the Home Affairs office that is actually located at that particular hospital. So my issue, which I want to bring forward here, is that in the public hearings which we had, there are a number of people that came and said, no, look, I give birth to a child, I get the treatment from government, I'm unemployed, and so forth. After giving birth to a child, I must again pay transport coming from the rural areas to go to a nearby hospital where I'll be able to register my child for birth. And then that person must now make a comparison whether she must go and register the child now, or she must budget and maybe register the child after a later stage. So it becomes a challenge. And then I think it has also been raised by a number of our people in the public hearings. So I would like the department just to clarify and say, how do they deal with such situation in instances where the child was not registered for 30 days? And then in the offices where we know that those hospitals or clinics where the children are born, there's no facility to register, or there's no function to register the child for birth. What happens in such instances? And then, Honorable Chairperson, my last issue, I think it was quite similar to the issue raised by Honorable Aris, but I just want to converse it a little bit different. When we had the session with the children in Cape Town, the closed session, one of the children also who raised an issue with us there was that she's a child of two foreign nationals. And then this child has been qualifying, she is a recipient of the foster care grant. She was a recipient of the foster care grant for quite some time. And then up until she reached 18. And then from there, she could not even qualify to get, to register for an ID or to get government services and all of that. So the question that came into mind here is that, are you a South African citizen only up to the age of 18 when you are born, when you are a child of two foreign nationals? And then after the age of 18, you are no longer a South African citizen. If the department can also clarify me in that issue. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me not waste your time further. Thank you very much for being patient with me. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. Can I request honorable members that have already spoken to drop their hands in the gadgets? You, Honorable Opperman, is to follow, and Honorable Mhlongo.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity.
By the way, I'm sorry. There's Honorable Abrams after Honorable Krizel.
Honorable Bonita, thank you also.
Honorable?
Marie, Bonita Marie.
Hey, you are not a spokesperson. Okay, continue, Honorable Giselle.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Alex. Yes, and then Mhlongo. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. Good morning to all the colleagues.
Morning.
I went through my notes last night, and the overarching theme in Northwest was the plight of undocumented orphans. I'd like to know from the department, how do you handle the many undocumented orphan learners in Northwest, considering that they are on the Platinum Belt and there's a lot of migration, a lot of interprovincial travel, a lot of border crossing? How do you handle that, especially in Northwest? And there was a plight from the residents of Moses, Katane, local municipality, that the department put programs in place to assist traditional leaders with documentation for orphans. I want to know, is that possible? And do you have any programs in place to assist the traditional leaders? Then in Makwasi Hills in Northwest, the residents said that illegal foreign nationals exacerbate the problem of undocumented children, and the borders need tightening. So I want to know from the department, do you have any idea or plans in place for a collaborated approach between yourselves and the sister departments to address this issue? And then I want to know from our department, Social Development. In December 2020, Minister Zulu launched a 19 million program called Children on the Move to assist undocumented minors in South Africa. I want to know how many of the almost a million migrant and refugee children has been helped with documentation through this Children on the Move program. And then a theme that came up a lot through the public hearings, everywhere I went, I heard that if you don't have a birth certificate, then you cannot go to school, you cannot get the child support grant, you cannot write matric. So I came back home and I asked myself if this is true. And in fact, the courts held in December 2019 in Grahamstown by Judge President Salbi Benengen that a child has a right to education and extends to everyone within the boundaries of South Africa. And no child may be blocked from accessing school because of documentation. So the clause 15 of the admission policy for ordinary schools of 1998 was found unconstitutional. So I want to know, what is the department doing on their behalf to discard the untruths on the ground and to implement the law? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Can you follow, Alex?
Yes.
No, Chair.
Are you?
Sorry, Chair. Is it me or Alex?
Alex, first, because I should have given Alex before Gizeh. Sorry for that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the Department of Home Affairs for the presentation. Chairperson, I share my colleague's sentiments that the presentation we've been provided here today does not equate to the reality on the ground. A classic example of that is when we were in Bushbuckridge, Mpumalanga. You know, they spoke about the mobile units, that when the mobile units are in the area, they are always offline. And then the mobile unit leaves and they don't see the mobile unit for quite some time thereafter. And Chairperson, you know, the internal capacity challenges and internal network challenges and all the challenges Home Affairs are facing, you know, one could argue that these challenges that are internal largely are actually infringing on the rights of our children in this country. And it's something that we need to take very seriously, Chairperson. So my questions to the department, I'd just like to know, what is the relationship, or is there a relationship between Home Affairs and ECD forums? Because we learned a lot during the public hearings that ECD principals and these ECD forums have a lot of undocumented children within the ECDs. So I would like to know if at a provincial level, a district level, is there consultation with the ECD forums to get this sorted out? Then Chairperson, Mr. Sigama mentioned that they do a run through the schools to assist matriculants with IDs. And Chairperson, we have over, 23,000 public schools in this country, and noting Home Affairs capacity challenge, I'm just trying to understand how this is all possible, how quickly we run through schools. And I would like to know, the Home Affairs doesn't have to give me the information now, they can perhaps send it in writing, but I'd like to know, what are these particular schools that they are mentioning? I think it is on slide, on one of the slides, they said they run through certain schools. And I'd like to know why certain schools and not all schools gets visits from Home Affairs. And you know, when it comes to the issuing of IDs, then Chairperson, I'd also like to find out whether or not Honourable Aries and Honourable Stock mentioned specific issues that came out of you know, the closed hearing with children, but there were also a lot of other issues that came out in the public hearings. And I'd like to know if this information of specific cases and specific Home Affairs problems have been handed over by our social development committee to Home Affairs, and is Home Affairs taking up those specific problems? Because Chairperson, you know, many of the members of public, they stood up there and they spoke to us as if we are going to, you know, solve their crisis and solve their problems immediately. And now no one comes back to them. And I would just like to find out if Home Affairs have that information, if they'll be going back to those specific cases. And then lastly, Chairperson, I would like to find out, because I know because of COVID, this was stopped. And I just would like to find out if Home Affairs will be doing it again, if we can access the service. that if we have a group of, like, say, you know, 50 young people who are wishing to apply for their smart IDs, you know, noting that they can't always get to the Home Affairs offices and spend the whole day there, transport costs, etc. If Home Affairs are coming out to communities on request, and if they are doing this, who is the contact person for Cape Town? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Alex. It's Honorable Mushongo, followed by Honorable Neti.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to honorable members and the Department of Home Affairs. Okay, I've got just a few questions. One would be, in a case whereby a South African parent had an ID before, but that ID got cancelled or was blocked for some reasons, how do those parents then get to register their children? And also, Chair, seeing that the 30 days period of registering children is a difficulty because of a number of challenges people from the rural area especially faces, can the department look into the matter of extending the 30 days maybe? And then lastly, Chair, what is the department's view on the proposal to make paternity tests free or cost free or more affordable for society? What is the view of the department there? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mshongo, followed by Honorable Neti and Jane, Honorable Mangal. Is it Polnisa? Who's this? Is it a new member?
Yes, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Is it my turn to speak now? Can I speak?
Yes.
Chair, I'm coming from Bloemfontein in the Free State. And as you know, we are in the middle, litigious in the middle of the Free State, and we're having a massive problem. And in Bloemfontein, we're having a massive problem where the lines is every day very long, and all the mobile offices are not working. They are always offline, or they don't have something in the thing. My question that I want to ask the department, because this is one of the departments that we are struggling with in Bloemfontein, and also Welkom and the whole of the Free State, because of the migration of people all the time. We have children that where the fathers maybe staying in Bloemfontein and the mother come from Lesotho, and then when they have a child, they cannot register the child because the mother is from Lesotho and the father is from South Africa. We're having that problem where children attend school from grade R creche and go to high school, and when they are finished, they cannot go study at the university because they don't have a birth certificate. The other problem that we are having is when the mother's coming from Lesotho, the father's from South Africa, they want DNA tests, and the fathers are unemployed, they can't afford the DNA tests, and it becomes very difficult for the grandmother that is assisting the children to rear the children, to get the money from social development to support the grandmothers, and the grandmother's the one that is always looking after the children. And then I just want to know, I've been working the farm schools, and I have 8 orphans in the one farm school where the mother and the father passed away. But because the principal has been at the school for 35 years, she knows the whole family of the farms there. But the principal is trying to get birth certificate for these children because she's allowing the children to be in the school there. The department is making it very difficult for her to get birth certificate because she knows the child since the child was born. She knows the family's history and all that, but getting a birth certificate for that child is very difficult, and the principal has asked me for assistance, so I'm very happy that we are discussing this thing today. I would like to know, how can Home Affairs assist us with those children that basically don't have mothers and fathers? And then on this thing of fathers going to register children without the mother's knowledge, I think that is going to be a problem because a lot of fathers just want the child to have the father's surname, but he's never involved in the child's life. He haven't been there since the mother was pregnant. So that is going to create a lot of complications at the end of the day. And then also on social development, Chair, is that a father, the mother take a child to another province, the father tried to get on with the child. He goes to social development. Social development is saying, no, the mother is right. But the father don't have any access to see his child because the child is in another province without his knowledge. They just remove the child. And when the child gets to the other province, the mother doesn't even look after the child. The family, the neighbors call the father and say, hey, come fetch your child. But social development is the one that is saying, no, you cannot have a child. You cannot come and visit your child because the mother got the right for the child. So that is there where we're also having a problem, Che. The other thing that I want to say is that this 30 days registration is basically a very difficult thing because we are surrounded by farm areas. And when the people come to hospital, they come and give birth and they are on the farms. Like the previous speaker was saying is that my daughter gave birth and there was a lady with her in the same ward. And the mother, I can see the mother doesn't have a birth certificate. But now because the mother doesn't have a birth certificate, the child is not going to have one. The child is going to have the same problem that the mother is having. And we all know on the farms they have a problem where parents are drinking a lot. You can see the problems that they're having on the farms. So it means that child is going to have difficulties when their child grow up to go to school and to university. I want to know what the department is going to do about that, especially the rural areas where these people are working on this farm. And then what I've also experienced personally as a counselor, when I was a counselor in the municipality, is that when a person of Lesotho passed away, you can't get the certificate for the person to take the body from Bloemfontein to Lesotho. It's a problem because there's no death certificates. How are we going to go around that problem, Che? If the department can give us answers on that one. But as far as the Lesotho and South Africa problem is that basically we are neighbors and basically we are one, but we cannot get certificates because we are coming basically from two different countries, even though we are in the middle of each other. We can't do anything about that. So yes, we are having a problem with Department of to get IDs, to get birth certificates. And we are struggling, really struggling with the Bloemfontein offices because there's queues for that is every day like that. So if they say they have this office, that they can take these mobile offices, but they are not working, they don't have all the things in the things in, but they are saying in this program they have just showed us now, in the slide they showed us now, they have 98 mobile offices, but they are not really doing anything because they are not online at the moment. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable. Is it Jay? Honorable Mangani. And then followed by Honorable Bilankulu. She will be the last one, so that we can be able to give the department to answer in some of these questions and concerns. Over to you, Honorable Mangani. Honorable Jay? Not yet connected. Can we get... Meanwhile, Honorable Kate.
Thank you very much. You affording me the opportunity.
Today. Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm around.
Okay,
yeah, I'm around.
Okay, all right.
Let me speak. I'm having a challenge of network, Chairperson. I'm sorry. Honorable members, I have to echo what honorable members they have said. I appreciate the briefing by the department, and most of the questions they have answered me. But this one, I didn't hear it coming clear from the department. In my area, in Northwest, most of the people who are staying in this province, they have married women from outside the countries. So the challenge in terms of them getting the ID or the birth certificate for their child is very much difficult. They can't even get it. because the father can't make it. I hear the presenter say the law, but it's going to take a long time. Children don't go to school because the school will give them 3 years to say, after 3 years, you must have make sure that you have got all the documents for the mother to be able to take the ID. But it takes years. And then the child can't even go to the university, can't even write the matriculation. So I wanted to know the how part of it. How is that is going to happen? Because what the national is saying is not what is happening on the ground. And then we have really a serious challenge, because most of women whom I'm talking about, they are the foreigners, and then they are mental, they are not stable. So the kids are just suffering outside. So I need, because this question is one of those that we've had during our public hearing. People ask us, the chairperson, I'm sure she remembers, when the hall was full of most women who are foreigners saying, we are here, our children, we can't do anything because our husband can't even take the ID for our kids. So, Mina, I'm saying, what the department is saying, it should cascade down to their offices. The last one, is this one when somebody is 40 LRD people who come from other provinces, my province is very difficult to go because it's a challenge really. People have grown in the farms, they have left them there, they were working, they don't even have, you have the school where they were schooling when they were young. And then you find out the school has moved out. You must go and look for the one of the teachers. Make laws as this country. But they go to school. What next one is that one Honorable Stock have talked about? That young woman that we met during at the national public hearing, she says, I'm a foreigner. I don't know anyone where we come from. I was born here. My father and mother died here. I don't know even their same name because I was still young. Then I was sent to this center. Now I'm 18 years. Where to go? And now I have to vacate. At that center because I'm old, but I don't know anyone around here in South Africa. So we must, if we strengthen, we must strengthen. I want to say what Honorable Lizelle was saying. I'm staying around the borders. Everyone is here. Mining area is where I'm staying. All the people are here. And then let's strengthen what the presenter was saying. The border, let's strengthen the border because those who are in, it's hurting us because we are the one now that should take to assist them. So let's make sure that we strengthen whatever. I don't know how, but it's very much difficult. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The last one is Honorable Kate. Thank you, Honorable Mangani.
Thank you very much.
Before you, Honorable Kate, can we request the people that haven't named their cousins, Honorable Members and officials? It's bad when you look at the hands, you see names that you can't even pronounce them. Can we request the one who accepts us
to get into this meeting. Those that haven't named their guys yet, be kicked out of the meeting. Thank you. Over to you, Katie.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning, colleagues.
Morning.
Chair, a few things since I'm the last person. the first one, the first one, Chair, that I want to check with the department is the issue of children born out of wedlock. You know, let's say, for instance, the child is born, their biological parents are all South Africans, but the child is out of wedlock. And it happens that the child bears the father's surname. But when the mother wants to travel with the child, it's problematic for the mother to apply for the document, whether the passport or the visa, for her own child, because the child is bearing their father's surname. They will say they need consent of the father. And in most cases, you find that the father or the mother have moved on. They are now in their new relationships or having their families. It's not easy for the father to come and consent for that child. Meanwhile, now the father is with another woman. Can't the department find a way of doing these things? Because on the child's birth certificate, there is the name of the mother and the child. Can't they find a way of permitting that the mother, the permission to do everything for her child, even if there is no consent of the father? Bearing in mind that it may happen that it can also pose a challenge for those that will happen not to be their biological parent. The second thing, Chair, is the issue of dysfunctionality of offices, in a sense of having long queues, and sometimes the system is down. But you find that the department is not communicating that thing in time with people. Why can't they make it a law to say, if there is this thing, like maybe they're experiencing a load shedding, or maybe the system is off simply because of other challenges. Maybe they get a slot in maybe in their local radio station, and also the way of communicating with the local municipality to, in order to disseminate this information to the society, that the office won't be in use for a week, or we are facing this challenge as an office for this period, so we want our community members to be aware of. Because in most cases, I want just to give an example of Guyana, you'll find that people are there for a week without getting any help, and those people were not aware of what is happening there. So can't they find a way which will be easier and simpler for our people to know what is happening with their offices? The last thing, Chairperson, is the issue of citizenship. Like here in Limpopo, you'll find that there are a lot of foreign nationals. Some are here for more than 30 years, because you may find that they have kids, and the kids now has passed even grade 12. But the challenge that they are facing, that they don't have IDs in order to go to the tertiary. How long does it take for foreign nationals, if they are in our country for some years, to be permanent, to get permanent citizenship? While on that other issue again, you will find that there is a situation where a woman comes from our neighboring countries. Let me give an example of Mozambique or Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, that lady is highly expectant. After a month or so, that woman gives birth. And because that woman gives birth in our country, it means that child now is eligible to get the birth certificate in our country. And after getting all that, the mother and the child goes back to his original country. But at the beginning of each and every month, you'll find that those foreign nationals are coming to our country just to get benefits, like social grant, and back to their hometowns. What is it that the department can do in order to monitor this situation? And again, most of these people who are staying here for some years without having proper documentation, but they're getting access of, let's say for kids that are going to school and they're also going to the hospitals in order to get treatment when they are not well. And you'll find that our South African people are suffering, or they end up not getting proper help from our country, simply because they are sharing what is due to them with these other foreign nationals. Because the foreign nationals are not registered, or they are not appearing in our register in order to say, maybe if the municipality is asking for the grant, they'll be saying they're having this number, so they qualify for this. But because those people are not in the register, they end up benefiting, and you find that those that were supposed to benefit at the end of the day, they are not benefiting. What is it that can be done by the department and our government in order to solve some of these critical issues? I thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Honorable.
Chair, I forgot one question. Okay.
Yes, Ms.
I'm struggling, Chair. Last, when we were in Free State, the one senior staff member said to us, the issue of the birth certificate in most area in Free State, they are not struggling because they go to the ambassador of Lesotho who stationed in Free State. So I want to know, I'm still asking this question, Chair. I want to know how. Is it legitimate for people from outside to get the birth certificate direct? And then the last one is this one that we have given people citizenship. When they are tired of staying here, they go back to where they come from. But every month, they come and get grants with us here. Now they are benefiting twice. They are staying at their homes there, but they are consuming the money. I want to know, how do we solve it? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Meeting. Thank you,
Chair. I'm very sorry. I know you want to go to answers, but I also forgot one question, which will take 1 second.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I forgot to ask whether the Department of Home Affairs has got a joint protocol with our DC department outlining the roles and responsibilities of the respective officials with regards to late registration of orphans and abandoned children. And if there's such a joint protocol, whether we could be furnished with that as a committee, please, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Lizelle. You are the one who's supposed to assist us as a member of Home Affairs. But thank you very much, Honorable Members. You know, DM and your team, We've been longing to have a meeting with you. There's lots and lots, streams of questions that communities were asking during our public hearings. Even ourselves, where we stay, we do have some questions to ask from the Department of Home Affairs. But you know the protocol and also the way on how we deal with these issues. We had to hang on and waited and waited until we have this time around. So don't be surprised when we ask lots and lots of questions. If you can, you can respond to them today. But if you are unable to answer some of other questions, rather than to just answer in any way, you rather write them down as the other member requested you to do so. When I was doing the public hearings, when we were doing public hearings, SABC interviewed me. And they asked some few questions in terms of these undocumented kids, because we're going around for the Children's Amendment Bill. They asked a question on how do we deal with these children. Because practitioners from ECDs were flocking in these meetings, and they raised this thing of undocumented kids. The TV had a headline saying, the chairperson of social development is saying, foreign national children will get benefits in South Africa. That was the topic or heading. Tried to explain that it doesn't belong to us as social development to give documents to kids, but it belongs to Home Affairs. So whoever has a document from Home Affairs and social development, we are free to give them benefits. Remember, there is that allowance or that a subsidy that comes from social development then, where they count the number of kids and then they give subsidy according to the number. If a person has a document, or a kid has a document or certificate or birth certificate, whatever, Tina is social development, we can't say this one doesn't belong here, this one belongs to that area and other ones. I'm happy that honorable members has raised these ones of borders, because in Northwest, Free State, in Mpumalanga, has lots and lots. I just want to ask a question that is saying DM and the team. Out of the mobile offices that you're talking about, can't you first prioritize and look at the largest townships to have the satellite offices or those mobiles? Because the long queues, you get them in these areas that have got big townships and you get one office. If I may make an example, Islander. People have to wake up at 3 a.m. and stand outside until 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock until offices are opened. I don't know this way. They are trying to, their level best, to do it by giving them numbers and all that stuff of things. But can't they open up the office in their plan, looking at these townships? Because Mdantane is the second largest township following Soweto. Mpumalanga has got lots and lots, and strategize in your plan by placing these mobile offices or satellite offices. I just want to stop there, because most of the questions, I don't want to repeat these issues, because in Lesotho people, we are from Lesotho with another Department of Water. They are saying, why don't we, as its members, members of parliament that are requesting South Africa to do away with the border gates. You know, we couldn't answer them right now. okanye right then, because that issue can't be just said, oh, no, we'll discuss about this and that. But Home Affairs is also responsible. And this thing of the border gates doesn't, in fact, belong to Water Affairs only. It is an integrated program that needs to be discussed and look at the nitty-gritties. Just now, Honorable Jane has made mention of people that are coming from Lesotho, taking our monies here and going back on the day. They are just crossing in and out. You don't know exactly what is it that's taking place. Thank you very much, man. I don't want to waste time. Otherwise, we can ask other questions outside the meeting, because there is also justice that is waiting for us. Thank you very much. Over to you, DG, and the team. We will introduce the team from SOCDEF. They've joined us, but very late. But they apologize by saying that they are part and parcel, especially Mahlatsi, the one who was going around with us in these public hearings that we were faced with. Thank you.
Now, thank you very much, Chair. I think we have taken note of the questions as asked by members. I will request that we take them in this sequence. I forgot to introduce the DDG Human Resources, who is currently acting in that role. DDG Sefanye Tsomolife, who is also with us. I will request if there are any questions that she takes, and then allow Mr. Sigama to follow suit. And then DG, I will then try and wrap up once they have taken some of the questions. I will request them to be brief. I know that we've received quite a substantial number of questions. Some of them indeed will have to respond to them in writing due to time constraints that we have. Can I then request, Chair, through you, that we take them in that sequence in dealing with the questions?
Yes, PM, we can do that, and we allow you to write other ones and respond it in a written form. Thanks.
Then let's take DDG Sefanye Tsomolife, followed by Mr. Sigama and DG Makode.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Good morning. I've been following DM. I couldn't pick up any matter that could have been related to me unless I have missed it out. However, I will appreciate it if that could be raised, then I can respond to it. But I couldn't pick up a specific one that needed my response. However, if there is any, I will take it up. Thank you.
Then let's then take DG Sigama and then DG Makode.
Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll start from the beginning. There were questions raised by Honorable Leticia Aris. It's all about the problem that started when the child was born and doesn't know the country of birth for the rest of her life. How do we go about that? So indeed, as you are aware, colleagues, there was also a court judgment of that about Maria Ali versus the Department of Home Affairs, wherein indeed, in terms of citizenship, we were then given an order to make sure that we then take all those children and follow the adjudication processes within the department so that those children could be, that they could be regularized in the country. So we have those kids, but they have to visit our nearest offices to lodge applications. Upon adjudication, then they'll be told of the outcome. If a part of the adjudication, Chair, it includes verification of documentation and check whether it's true that they don't know any other country or they've never been to any of the countries that are alleged. So then the adjudication then will take that process and make sure that they then grant them a citizenship if they deserve. So I will then not speak about the 180 Zimbabweans. I believe DG will talk to that one. We take note of what has been raised about Nasprit office. And indeed, we will then really like to see if ever we can be finished with some of the documentation so that when we get to the area, at least we can then zoom into the specific cases that the honorable member has raised. I think yes, that will then be the way to resolve. Then there were questions raised by Honorable Masango in terms of the adoptive parents, where they are now claiming that it takes up to 3 years and there are delays. The issue of 6 to 8 weeks may not be proper. I must indicate in our presentation, I think we were very clear. We do receive applications, but most of the applications that are received, you find that they are either incomplete. Some of them, you find that when we request for additional information, the parents don't come forward. And also on our side, as was indicated, most of our records are in paper form. And then we have to go back to our archives to then draw our paper records so that we then match whatever the parent is claiming that it has information against the child. And once those things are verified, then we are able to run through the process. Our main challenge are for parents who don't respond or coming back to the department. And we also indicated that we are now at a stage where we would like to digitize all our records. Some of them are partly digitized. We're working with FSA, but now we've been given some budget to make sure that we then enter into a massive drive to digitize all our paper records. And we hope that will then speed up the process of re-verifying information as submitted by parents, because we want to make sure that we deal with legitimate cases rather than just say no, documents are submitted, and without proper verification, then you find our officials trying to allocate ID numbers. So we try, we acknowledge that there's that delay, but we want to make sure that only deserving cases do receive or are recorded in our National Population Register. Then, Honorable Liza, yes, there was a question raised by Honorable Boas and in the Portfolio Committee for Home Affairs. And indeed, as Home Affairs, we indicated that, yes, we did receive the court order. It was circulated to all offices. However, we are now making sure that we update our SOPs. And immediately after that, we are now training. As we speak right now, our officials are in KZN. They are now moving throughout the country to make sure that we train them on the reviewed SOP. That includes also the issue that was raised by Honorable Ross. But indeed, the court order, as indicated, was circulated. We'll just double check with our legal services if the directive is ready for circulation. Then free partner paternity test. I think that was another question that was raised by Honorable Ross. I would like to indicate, Chairperson, that as we have indicated, the Act allows that when the parents come to a Home Affairs within a period of 30 days, we don't even request for additional documentation. That's the first category. And we'd like to alert all parents out there to make sure that they immediately when the child is born, let's make use of the facilities that we have to register and make sure that before we leave that health facility, that child leaves with a birth certificate. Then the second category are for those parents who never had an opportunity to register. I'll try and club this with the one on children born in farming communities. I think it was raised by Honorable Polita. Then Honorable, the second category in terms of birth registration, if parents were not able to register birth within a period of 30 days, however, there's another level wherein we request that parents then come, they then indicate reasons why they were not able to register birth within 30 days. Those ones are categorized into two forms, 31 days up to 1 year. There's a small committee constituted in offices wherein they then ask you and then you finish us with documentation on and reasons why you were not able to register birth within that particular period. Then after 1 year up until 14 years, then there's another bigger committee that also now also sit with immigration and everybody just to evaluate and check why are we not able to register our children. And the last one is a category of those that are called, traditionally called late registration of birth, or LRBs, for those that are 15 years and above. That's where now we set up appointments, we call informants, guidance, parents, to then sit for an interview and then tell us and give us all supporting information so that we, once we have got all the information, then we register them. Then if all fails, that's where now we then say, according to the documents and verification that has been performed by the department, including immigration officers, informants, as well as the guardians that were furnishing the documents, we don't see any link or there are no sufficient reasons for us then to then register the child. That's where we then now devote to the issue of paternity test. That's the last resort, which we normally don't encourage, but we like people to utilize the window that we have indicated in the legislation so that they then make use of those categories without necessarily being forced to go for paternity test. However, if a child really is born between a South African and non-South African, indeed, if it's within that period, that child automatically we then classify that child as a South African, provided we then get the documents from the other party. But if one parent is South African, we normally classify that child as a South African after verification of the documents provided. There was a question around the banks. Honorable Lazar, we have got 28 banks that are currently linked. They are rendering services. And they are spread across provinces, but mainly during the pilot phase, we had concentrated on Gauteng and Western Cape. You find about 16 to 17 are in Gauteng. I think 5 to 6 are in Western Cape. We have now extended our pilot to other provinces, such as KZN, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, also have one in the White River. And those are the areas where we have connected, but we plan to then make sure that we extend our pilot beyond the 28, and if we then get the necessary resources, we should be able to roll out more than the 28 that we are having at the moment. There was a question from Honorable Stock. What happens to a situation where a child is born between SA and non-SA? I think I've covered that. So when a child is born between a South African and a non-South African, then that child is a South African by law. So should there be any other challenges on the ground, that's where now the non-South African will then have to produce documentation for purposes of registration, and then we then link that child to the non-South African as well. But by law, the child becomes a South African. Then I'll leave questions pertaining to immigration and then focus on those that are for civic services. There was a question around the 30 days and the transport. Maybe here, what one can indicate, Chairperson, is that we see the need of us now working closely with other departments. We've seen it before. As a department, we have formed the so-called stakeholder forums, wherein the stakeholder forum is comprised of various departments, and we have got coordinators or chair at the level of councillors, district mayors, and so on and so on. And those are the people who point us to the direction where services are required. So through their directives and the department, we then jointly then set up outreach programs and also be directed to areas where services are required. So those stakeholder forums are key for us, because they point us to the direction where services are required. We may not be at the pitch of it, but we hope with time then we'll gradually then find the footing on how best we can render these services to our clients that are in need of our services. Undocumented, Honorable Gisela, undocumented orphans, and the use of traditional leaders, illegal foreign nationals, a plan to address such programs. Yes, indeed. We, in terms of our regulations, we when you have got orphans that are catered for either by social workers or by any bodies that are formed out there, All we need as a department is a so-called social workers report with all the required documentation, and Home Affairs together with our team, then they will then set up an appointment to then look into all the documentation that that body has. Then from there, then they put up a team that will assist with registration. When our resources allows, we prefer that we visit those homes, but at the moment, they set up their own committees and set up appointments in various offices to deal with the orphans in groups, so that right at the end of the day, we make sure that their stay is regularized in the county. So we normally rely on a DSD to give us such reports so that such kids can be registered. There were questions, Honorable Chair, around the mobile units that are not visible. Now, indeed, with this, we have got 100 mobiles, as I've presented. They are spread across provinces. And what we did was to make sure that through stakeholder forums, school principals, as well as the district formation of districts that are out there, they then draft a plan for the whole year, wherein we will then find that per region, they'll indicate these are the areas that the mobile will be visiting, and we are now guided by them as stakeholders on the ground in terms of when and where do they need those mobiles. They are not owned at head office level. The province, together with stakeholder forum members, they coordinate and give us a plan. That plan is then consolidated into an annual program for the department, but in case there are challenges, then we know where to go. However, we have placed a few at head office level, so that when they are projects or specific, wherein communities are in dire need, when there are disaster, flooding, fires, so on, then those specific mobile units are then directed to those areas, then to work closely with the councillors after we've received the disaster management certificates. And then we then make sure that those people are serviced. We admit the 100 are not enough. The 10 that were procured may not be enough for now. But what we want to do is to make sure that gradually, as and when we receive the budget, we then extend our services from urban areas to far-flung areas, particularly in the deep rural areas, so that our clients can then receive the service. So we are working closely with the Department of Education. There is partnership with them. There's an MOU which is in place, and that also helps us to make sure that we then provide learners with the documentation that are required, either for them to sit for a matric or for them to get documentation in a form of a birth certificate. Now, the rest, I don't want to labor much. We will have to look into the document and then send a submission to the committee. Thanks very much, DM, and back to you. Thank you.
Just briefly, DJ, and then I'll try and sum up.
No, thank you so much, DM. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, honorable members, for the questions. Maybe let me start by checking the issues raised by Honorable Opperman with regards to the borders. There's work that's underway between ourselves and the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure with regards to securing the border line. And in the month of March, as you have heard from the Minister of Finance, we will be going to the market through request for proposals, looking at the redevelopment of 6 land ports, which are mainly the big ones, Maseru, Libombo, Bite Bridge, and others that are closer related to those. And then there's work that the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is currently doing around ensuring that they secure the borderline. So this is ongoing work, but it's a matter that we're paying attention closely to. Linked to that, Chairperson, you would have noted as part of protecting our borderline, there's an advert that has been sent out by the Border Management Authority, the new outfit, currently linked to the Department of Home Affairs, which we hope at some point will be a standalone authority. That's dealing precisely with border management related issues. This week they've advertised for about 200 positions, looking for people that will assist us as border guards to look at the borderline. Then there were questions raised by Honorable Abrams, Honorable Aris, and Honorable Polnita with regards to the request for mobiles. And I think, Didi Chisikama, we can share the current program for the mobiles, and for sure we should be able to incorporate some of the requests that are being made by the honorable members who have done the same with the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And then there were issues that were asked with, I think Didi Chisikama has responded to the bulk of this, but there are a number of initiatives, honorable members. We are currently working with traditional leaders, for example, Honorable Mangani in the Minga area. As you know, it's an area that's closer to Mozambique and the other related areas of Zimbabwe, where they've sent us a list of undocumented young children that are currently at school. So what we have done, we have set up a project team that's looking at some of those communities. Similarly, we're working with the Department of Justice to look at areas that Honorable Fandal Mierwe referred to us at some point around White River and all those areas that committee members would have visited. So I think it's important that we projectize some of these initiatives so that next time we come before this committee, we're able to provide an update with regards to the progress that we've made in that area. Honorable Chairperson, you raised an issue around East London. We've made a lot of interventions at that office, including redesigning the workflow process in the office. If you were to go there, you'll be able to see a number of changes. We've capacitated King Williamstown, and we've reopened Danzane, for example. It's one of our pride in terms of how the offering services. It now offers all services that Home Affairs offers. So we are making those inroads, and then linked to that, there's infrastructure initiatives where we have started. If you look at the bulk of our challenges are related to the infrastructure that we have or the offices that we have where people have to stand outside. We have now registered 15 offices with the presidency project office that's looking at the infrastructure to either ensure that we have a PPP for those offices so that we're able to build fit for purpose offices. If you were to look at one of our offices that's currently operational in Josikasike, a new modern office that enables people to be able to access services within the comfort of a secured environment. Similarly, in Kopane, there's construction, which is almost done. We've done the same in Kwando, we've done the same in Daung. And as this infrastructure projects come on board, we should be able to address some of the issues that have been raised by honorable members. Lastly, TM, there is an initiative that we are working with the UNHCR in particular to look at how we can bring on board embassies because they do have a responsibility to provide consular services to their own citizens that are in the Republic of South Africa. Lesotho recently did the same in November, December. When their Minister of Home Affairs came through to South Africa and they were able to do some of the registrations that have been referred to. And similarly, the UNHCR has indicated that they'll be able to provide us with support for these initiatives that I'm referring to in both Mpumalanga. However, I think we need to take cognizance of the challenges that are posed by colonial boundaries, Chairperson. For example, if you go to Mbuzini, you have a community that highly depends on activities that are in South Africa, but also historically, they've been one community separated by a border. How do we then deal with that? And there are initiatives where we are looking at that. Similarly, in Manguzi and Tidila Mlomo, which borders Botswana. So those are some of the initiatives that we currently are working on, and we should be able to come and provide an update to the community. Thank you, Pierre.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Just on a few issues, I think some of them will be able to respond to them in writing as suggested. Let me firstly send our commitment to this portfolio committee that we are hard at work to deal with issues of how we improve our service offering. The pain that is being felt by our citizens is a pain that we also feel. And our focus there is primarily on information technology as well as infrastructure improvement. In terms of infrastructure improvements, we have done some. If you look at the new offices that we are building in Taung in the north west, there's some that we are dealing with in the northern parts of KwaZulu-Natal, the Lusikisiki one being built, another one around the Vembe area. So we are hard at work in making sure that we improve our service offering. The issue of mobile units, they are there not to solve the problem completely, but to provide relief, because they are meant to service mainly the rural and the areas that are difficult to reach. So that is what their priority is. But with the challenges that we're having, we've now been deploying them. And they've been proving to be very successful in terms of coverage of schools. I mean, in the past year, by the end of the year, we only had about 1,000 children who did not have birth certificates. Upon investigation, most of them were children of foreign nationals who were already in schools, which takes me to another point. You will remember, Chair, that there was a court judgment that said you cannot chase children away from school on the basis that they are of foreign nationals. So you will get foreign national children who are going through school as a result of that particular court judgment. One issue that I think we need to speak with a single voice, particularly at the level of parliament and everywhere we go as members of parliament, is around on how do we deal with the immigration program that we face as a country. I don't think we need to have, you know, treatment that is different on the basis of the person that you are dealing with. We need to be firm and be decisive. If a person does not qualify for citizenship, we should not be trying to create ways in laws to make a person qualify for citizenship. We should be able to have clear-cut ways that if you don't qualify, you don't qualify, and there should not be an expectation from Home Affairs to give people citizenship who do not qualify for citizenship. And as such, proper procedures must be followed. If a foreign national child is in South Africa, they need to get a study visa for them to be able to start, and we need to process them in that particular way so that we have a sense of decisiveness and we discourage illegal immigration, because some of the way we will deal with things sort of promotes illegal immigration. And the issue of the 180,000 Zimbabweans, I'm not aware of any 180,000 Zimbabweans that are facing deportation. What you will have been referring to is the issue of the Zimbabwean special permit, where we have said within the next 12 months, I think now it's almost 7 months or so that are remaining, those who had access to the Zimbabwean special permits are now supposed to go and look for alternative visa regimes in which they must apply to be part of and then stay in the country in that way. Because we can't consistently extend a dispensation that was sort of meant for a specific purpose, because it was due to the economic situation of Zimbabwe. And when we had that Zimbabwean special permit, it had to come to an end, and we are giving a period of 12 months for all Zimbabweans who were under that particular dispensation to then apply for these visas, which will be processed through only one-on-one cases. Most of the questions that we're responding here, Chair, are as per request from the portfolio committee in the letter that was written to us. The issue of paternity test, I think it's an issue that is very important for this for this portfolio committee, is that paternity tests are there as a last resort if we can't find another way of proving that the father is indeed the father. And they are also there as a means of internal control. I mean, if we were to wake up today and say no one requires a paternity test, we can just show up at a Home Affairs office and say, this is your child, and then we register that child. You can imagine the influx of foreign nationals who will then come and say, look, oh, we have seen it with the marriages of convenience, where people marry because of convenience and it's become a fraudulent scheme. So we identify these risks early, and then we put up internal control mechanism. So the issue of paternity tests are also there as internal control mechanism. I think that Mrs. Gama has dealt with the issue of how we intend to make them accessible, easily accessible, particularly for the poor and the downtrodden. Lastly, we do register children after 30 days, but it is easier and we recommend that children must be registered within 30 days because we don't need a lot of documentation then. And we have not yet covered all the hospitals, but we continue opening our footprint in hospitals to make it easier for mothers to register the birth of their children. We have been opening some in the Eastern Cape recently, another one in Gauteng that we opened up recently. We are going to be going to KZN, opening up in another hospital, I think in a couple of weeks' time. So we are growing that particular infrastructure. Ultimately, we want to have reach in a substantial number of hospitals. Thank you very much, Chair, and we will then respond to the other questions in writing as you had suggested as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, DG, I mean, DM, with your team. We really appreciate on how you have responded to this. But it's not the end of the day. We will keep on asking questions, even in writing, and we will expect you to do as such by answering us in written form. Thank you very much. I think for now we have to move to justice. And if I am allowed by the members, we have to excuse you to go and do other responsibilities. unless there's something that needs you, but I don't think so. Thank you ever so much for your presence in this meeting that is very critical and crucial. Then if we agree to move on, the other briefing that we have to get is justice. Can we request a DSD to introduce themselves? Can we give over to Isabel to introduce the team that has joined us, and give over to Department of Justice to introduce themselves? Thank you very much. Where is Isabel?
Honourable Member, I'm here. I was trying to unmute. I'm sorry about that.
Over to you first.
Good morning, Honourable Member. Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'm Isabella Sukawan from the Department of Social Development. I want to start by apology. In the morning when the department was called, nobody responded. But I got the report that officials were here. I'm not sure why they did not say that they are here. The only confusion is that they confused themselves when DG's name was called. But for the mere fact that they are representing department, they could have said we are here. But I want to apologize on behalf of the DG and on behalf of myself and you know the senior officials in the department that when we were called, we did not respond. I unreservedly apologize for that. DG is not able to come because there's another important commitment that he was forced not to attend to, which relates to issues of APC, as we are in a period where we are supposed to wrap up on the APCs. DPME was here to give them report in terms of, you know, the evaluations that he has done, and he has asked me to apologize on his behalf. With us here, honorable members, we've got my 10 officials from the department. Most of them are from adoptions. We've got adoptions. We've got from the ones that are here legislation also.
Hello. We'll lost you, Isabel.
Can you hear me, members?
Yes, we hear you now. You said DG won't make it for the meeting.
Yes. DG won't make it for the meeting. He's in the process of ensuring that he championed the finalization of APP with DPME. They are giving us a report on their assessment so that we can be able to meet the deadline for the first meeting. He sent his apology.
And I'm saying here, honorable members, we are with 10 members from the department, and they have been there, you know, from the beginning. Just that maybe honorable member did not recognize them. We've got Mahlatsi from the legislation, and we've got Rosina from adoption. We've got Kinsey also from adoption. We've got Nokutula from legislation. I think Advocate Lada also joined, who is presently on leave, but he managed to join. We've got Njivuyo from adoption. We've got Dr. Mabi from adoption. We've got Yvonne from OBC. And we've got David from Office on the Rights of a Child. They've been in the meeting. And I still repeat that we are very much sorry about what happened, members. Thank you, honorable members.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Isabel. It's strange that they have been with us from the beginning. I requested them to introduce themselves. They didn't. Nevertheless, we wish to welcome them. Can we go straight to Department of Justice Department and first introduce themselves?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. My name is Advocate Siabi Matube, the Chief Family Advocate in the Department of Justice. I've got with me the members of the delegation who will also introduce themselves very quickly.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, this is Advocate Praise Kambula. I'm heading a unit that is responsible for the implementation of the pieces of legislation that relates to the protection of the rights of women, children, and persons with disabilities and older persons. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Charmaine Bardnors. I'm the Director for Child Justice and Family Law in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development.
Honourable Chair, may I take this opportunity as well to register the apologies from our Minister and Deputy who could not join this meeting due to cabinet committees that are currently underway. And the DG and the acting DDG court services were also with us here at 9 o'clock when the meeting started, but they had to excuse themselves to go and join the departmental strat plan session, which is underway. The department is here, Honorable Chair, to deal with those questions that were contained in the letter dated the 17th of February 2022. Maybe at this early stage, I should also mention how that the judiciary is not part of the Justice Department. So our presentation will focus on those areas which pertain to the Justice Department. If I, Honorable Chair, with your permission, I may go straight into the questions. The first of the questions was relating to the magistrates and family advocates being biased against biological fathers in custody, divorce, and separation cases. Maybe I should start by explaining who family advocates are. Family advocates are officers of the court who are admitted in terms of the Admission of Advocates Act, which is administered by the Legal Practice Council, and the professional conduct and ethics are controlled by those bodies, and should a family advocate be found to be conducting themselves other than what the professional ethics of dictate, the General Counsel of the Bar can disbar them if they are found guilty of that unbecoming conduct. The second thing is that the family advocate has been created by statute, namely the Mediation in Certain Divorce Matters Act of 24 of 1987. And it has given family advocates the powers and duties of what they can do in matters of custody, divorce, and separation. Firstly, they are empowered by Section 4 to conduct an inquiry, to furnish the court with a report on the best interest of the child. They are empowered to adduce evidence and cross-examination of witnesses at the hearing of the action in court or the hearing of an application. The family advocate's inquiry is completely focused on the child. The family advocate goes into the inquiry seeking to establish what the developmental needs of the child are, how best those needs will be met within the context of the reconstituted family arrangement or post-parental separation after considering the personal circumstances of each of the parents or caregivers or litigants for that matter. So the inquiry is conducted in a multidisciplinary matter with the assistance of a family counselor. A family counselor is also described in the Mediation in Certain Divorce Matters Act. In the instance of the Department of Justice, it is a specialized social worker who conducts a forensic investigation and evaluation of the facts and circumstances in each case, insofar as they impact on the welfare or the best interest of the child, and then they will make a recommendation to the family advocate. In a nutshell, it means when the litigation comes up, the family counselor is going to be the expert witness of the family advocate. Then after receiving the report of the family counselor, the family advocate applies the law to the findings of the family counselor as well as all relevant factors within the application or action, and then finishes a report with recommendations to the court as required by the Act. So that also should say that the family advocate is not the final arbiter of the case, but merely makes a recommendation to the court. The final decision lies with the court whether or not to accept the recommendations made by the family advocate. While considering the report and recommendation of the family advocate, the court will naturally determine whether or not the family advocate has acted and reported appropriately and in accordance with the law. So that is another level of scrutiny that the family advocate comes under, besides professional ethics, besides the processes and procedures. Then upon adjudication, the report of the family advocate gets scrutinized again. Each case is determined on its own merits, the needs of each individual child, as well as each child's developmental stage, will also form part of the factors that inform the decision. In determining the matters of a child's welfare best interest, they are guided by the provisions of Section 7 of the Children's Act, which set out the long list, I think it's 14 or 17 factors, which must be considered, as well as previous decided cases of the competent court. So if one looks at all these factors that I have stated, one can clearly see that the question of the family advocate being biased against one or any other party of the proceeding or a parent or a caregiver does not arise, nor does the process described here in above, as well as professional ethics, leave room open for any family advocate bias. Right. The next question, Honorable Chair, relates to the family advocates using divorce and custody processes or expenses to enrich themselves. The question in itself is not very, very clear, but maybe the following will set it in perspective. In South African law, court processes are determined and legislation and legislated by Act of Parliament, also by regulation, also by uniform rules of court, magistrate court rules in the lower court, as well as the practice manuals that are drawn up by the various heads of court. That this is in the instance of the High Court, and the regional court presidents have also got their own separate practice manuals. The application of the aforementioned legal frameworks have been interpreted also in decided cases and are upheld in accordance with the well-established principle of stare decisis. Stare decisis, it forms part of South African law. It's well entrenched in South African law. What it simply means is that a court hearing in matter is bound by a previous decision of the same or higher court. So that is how formalistic our processes are, in not just custody, in any matter that is heard in front of our courts. So in the employ of the Department of Justice, they do not stand to draw fees from individual cases to conduct themselves otherwise. That is, if they were making money from individual cases that come before them, would constitute both a criminal offense and a breach of the departmental code of conduct. And any such conduct would be reported to the relevant authorities. And as I mentioned in the beginning, the General Counsel of the Bar will also take action against a family advocate that does such. Also, the Family Advocate's Office is responsible for two of the department's key performance indicators that are in the department's annual performance plan, which bear specific predetermined targets, namely to finalize 80% of the cases which are registered with them between a period of 12 months. Besides it being almost impossible to manipulate processes for personal advantage, the family advocate has got the responsibility to meet these targets. And these targets are subject to scrutiny by, among others, the Auditor General. Then the next question, which the department will endeavor to respond to, Honorable Chair, is the one pertaining to the long delays in the application and renewal of foster care orders. The department in this environment has got the responsibility to support courts. They support the children's courts. This they do by capturing data relating to children's courts proceedings on the Integrated Case Management System, which is popularly known as ICM. ICMS. This is our electronic reporting system, which is utilized. The core drivers of the court proceedings in renewal of foster care orders and related matters are the social workers and the magistrates. What do we see from the reports from the ICMS? Are that the predominant reasons for the postponement of foster care applications, and this covers the period 1st April 2020 to February 2022. The front runner there is postponement for further investigation, followed by, and the percentages are reflected there in the presentation, further investigation accounts for 43%. Notice to appear in court accounts for 16%, outstanding information for 15, review appeal for 12, and less than 10 are parties involved being absent from court, or outcomes from Form 30, or social worker absent, or the child being absent from court. That is the part that we are able to pick up as support role players to the children's court. Right. The ICMS children's court provides data captured by the clerks of the courts from the case records that flow from the court proceedings. with its restricted administrative role in the management of foster care matters, the department is therefore unable to analyze the statistics which are captured in the ICMS into deeper detail further than just the analysis that was given in the previous slide. The judiciary and the Department of Social Development are therefore better placed to provide the diagnostics, the explanations, and the reasons for postponement in deeper and more analytic detail, since they are the key drivers in the management of court processes that may impact on the finalization of foster care orders. However, it should be noted that the reasons for postponement captured on the ICMS may not necessarily reveal the decisive and determinant factors which contribute to these delays. The department is just sharing the information that it obtains from the court. Then there was a recommendation also in the letter that contact courts that can build up institutional expertise and experience when it comes to conflicts over contact and care of children. We are not sure what understanding to attach to the concept of contact courts, because these are not provided for in the Children's Act. However, the Children's courts are, the jurisdiction is described in the Children's Act, at which is very, very, very broad in nature. In Section 45 of the Children's Act, for instance, it says that the Children's Court may hear matters which involve the protection and well-being of children, the care or contact of a child, the paternity of a child, the support of a child, the provision of an early childhood development services, the prevention or early intervention of services, cases of maltreatment, abuse, neglect, degradation or exploitation of a child, except in criminal prosecutions, and a whole list of areas that the Children's Court can deal with. Children's Court are specialized courts dealing with these matters. A small amount of these kind of matters are also heard in the High Court. So we were a bit at a loss to attach meaning to those, but the courts that can hear contact courts, there are 416 children's courts in the magistrate courts, that is the permanent magistrate court. And then if we include the branch courts and the periodical courts, we sit with a grand total of 723 courts, which in our country can hear contact matters. And also, Section 42 of the Children's Act said, for purposes of this Act, every magistrate court, as defined in the Magistrate Court Act 1944, shall be a children's court and shall have jurisdiction on any matter arising from the application of this Act, from the area of its jurisdiction. So, Madam Chair, the Honourable Chair, those are the attempts to tackle the recommendation for contact courts. I think we will, the department will leave it there. That will be the conclusion of the presentation of the department. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there no additions from your side?
I will check with Chair. The indication is that there are no additions. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I can see that there are people that are picking up, and as if they would like to say something. Thank you for that brief and to the point presentation. Can I then, and they are disturbing you, they are disturbing you, they must not, because we are able to see them in the video, and I understand that this is video live, and also it's in channel 408, and it's direct, so they are being seen. Can we then, thank you very much, can we then check the honorable members? Yes, I see the hands. I see the hand of Honorable Masangu, Honorable Alex, and Honorable Jane. Well, there's also Gisela. Can I give over to these honorable members to engage with your presentation? Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Masangu.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to thank the Department of Justice for the presentation. And the reason that my questions, Chair, have to do with what I believe the honorable advocate, I mean, the advocate presented to say that the role of the Department of Justice is restricted and other issues may be directed to the judiciary. Now, I just need to mention the issues that I thought that the Department of Justice would touch on as it relates to the Children's Amendment Bill. And then the department will say that, yes, those are the things that the judiciary must deal with. The first of those being the applications for guardianship, where there were comments that were made during the early parts of the public, especially national public hearings, by the organizations such as your Center for Child Law, Cindy, and the Children's Institute, who were saying that the Children's Court should be able to deal with all issues relating to children so that there are no issues, there are no cases that need to go to the High Court because there are expenses that are involved, and also the children are not, there is no express sort of law that protects the children, the identity of children and things like that. They even, Chairperson, had the examples of where matters were handled by the High Court, and then as a result, the names or identities of children were actually had to be published because the High Court does not provide expressly for the protection of children's information. The other section also that I would have thought that the Department of Justice would have touched if because it has to do with the section 6 and 74, this is what I've just spoken to, the children's right to privacy in children's court proceedings. The other one, Chair, is where it talks about the certificate, section 21A, that talks about the certificate, the process for unmarried dads to be expanded to include dad in case where mom is dead or absent. So my question, I guess, I cannot elaborate on asking the question because I also, number one, I've just realized that there was a letter and that letter would have then sort of cast the parameters or the scope of the responses from the department. And number two, I am not sure if the letter did say or even provide the information that was deliberated upon during the national public hearings. So I just feel like I can't say that the Department of Justice must answer these questions when I don't know what the letter actually that they received was covering. So Chair, I just would leave my question there, but those are the sections and the parts of the Children's Amendment Bill that one would have thought that the Department of Justice would actually respond to in this meeting. So thank you, Chair.
Can we go to Honorable Alex whilst Honorable Jane is struggling with connecting?
Oh, I'm around, Chair. I'm around. Sorry.
Okay. Okay. Again. Chair? Yes.
Ndiyangena ndiyabulela kakhulu ngalo mzuzu undinika wona. But ndifuna ukubuza ndiyazixelela, Chair. Andivanga kakuhle. I didn't hear properly, so you will forgive me. I want to ask this question. I heard about this children's court, but my issue is that when the child is granted to my husband, and then later I'm not able to can see my child, when I go there, I have to pay money for those social worker there so as to accompany me, the social worker of my husband, that I have been paid by my husband. I have to go and pay again. And then when I talk to my child, they will be just here. So I don't understand this issue. That's why I'm raising it here. So that if there is help, I should get that help for somebody who have asked this question while we were at the public hearing. I think the chairperson maybe you remember, and also Honorable Bilankulu, when that lady was crying and said her child is taken from Joburg to East London, Port Elizabeth, somewhere there. And then she don't know where, but when she's supposed to visit, she has to pay money. So I just want to ask, what about this money? Why, when I want to see my child, I have to pay this amount of money? What caused that? It's because I'm forbidden to see my child, or what is that? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mangani. You have also assisted me because I was going to ask that question. Thanks for that. Then can we go to Honorable Alex?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Chairperson, my question centers around capacity. What does the department's family advocate capacity look like in relation to caseload and backlogs? Because it then ties in to the question of fees. So if family advocates don't charge fees, you know, the likelihood of people accessing those services are obviously greater because it's been free. But then I think the members of the public, when they mention about these exorbitant fees that they have to pay, in terms of legal fees and psychological fees comes into when they seek private legal counsel. And it's my understanding that, you know, one of the recommendations were, you know, standardizing of fees, legal fees. But it's my understanding that, you know, as government, we can't influence the private legal fraternity and the fees they charge. So I'd just like some clarity from the department on that, some clarity on the capacity challenges. And then also from the side of social development, you know, they say it's a specialized social worker that has to deal with all these cases. And I would like to know what is our capacity looking like on these specialized social workers. And then also, I mean, our social workers are the ones who then have to go back and also help with the implementation of the parenting plan. So there's a lot of work and a lot of pressure on our social workers when it comes to these cases. And I just want to go to my notes quickly. And then also, you know, on the template that was given from the ICMS, and our DOJ says they can't see information further than what is presented to us here, and this and social development will be able to give us more information. So my question for social development then is, of this further reason for postponement, further investigations, that's 43%. What exactly are we looking at here? Yeah. Is it because the social worker hasn't done enough of the legwork and therefore it gets thrown out? And this again speaks to the capacity of our social workers. So I would like, even if they do it in writing, for the Department of Social Development to perhaps just unpack this information that is now found on this ICMS management, just so we can understand where the real hiccups are in terms of those backlogs. And then lastly, Chairperson, I would like to please request through you, Chair, if the department can please give us an updated status report on the foster care backlogs for provinces. Last year, you know, we got some regular status reports, and it's just been a while since we've looked at those foster care backlogs. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Alex. Honorable Gisela.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
By Bonita.
Thank you, Chair.
I don't know who's disturbing now. Thank you. Apology for that one.
Okay. My questions derive from my notes of the public hearings. So if my issues are related to the judiciary, please just leave them unanswered then, because I'm totally confused now. So my first question is, out of the Germiston public hearings, it was said that 92% of cases, in 92% of cases, children automatically goes to the mother. So I want to know, how often do fathers get full custody in South Africa? Then in relation to perjury, I was laughed at because I didn't know what was a silver bullet. And I then afterwards heard it was malicious parent syndrome. So I want to know, regarding perjury and false accusations, there was a plight for proper investigations and accountability and repercussions for false accusations or perjury in terms of custody dispute cases. So, and they also asked that there be charges for perjury must be automatically mandatory. I want to know the views of the department on that, please. And then it was strongly argued on the ground that parental alienation must be declared as child abuse. I want to know what is their views on that, please, Chair. And then you may only be 18 years before you can relinquish your parental rights in South Africa. And your child can then be adopted when you're 18. So in the meantime, you need the legal guardian's consent for adoption. So what about teen mothers who don't want their babies, and how is an unfit mother then in the best interest of the child. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Pauline. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to ask you patiently, because I wasn't part of your roadshow. I just became a member a month ago. I just want to ask a question, and it's something that is bothering me, because we are talking about children here. I met a grandmother from Rustenburg, and this grandmother related to me a story that she had written to the Minister of Police, and she's been to all the departments of development and everything. What happened to grandchildren? She's only having one daughter. The daughter is having two children, a son and a the girl is 17 and the boy is 11 years old. December, they went to the father's place because the father's working in the mines in Rustenburg. They went to Eastern Cape. The children never came back. She herself went to Eastern Cape to look for the children. She can't find the children. She's hearing that the children is in KZN. She traveled to KZN. No one knows about the children. The problem that she's having, the daughter of 17 years old must go to Tyneburg Hospital every month because she's having epilepsy and I don't know what. The 11-year-old is very introverted, doesn't speak much. The grandmother is very upset because no one is assisting her. She's been to police station, she's been to social worker, she's been everywhere, and no one is assisting her. And she was crying when she was telling me she don't know what to do because the father is in the mines. He goes there. They come out late at night. She tried to get hold of him because the girlfriend is also staying with him. And the mother is so sick. Her daughter is so sick at home that she can't even get up because this thing of the children not being found is making her very ill. I just want to know from the Department of Justice, what is the next step that this grandmother can take because her daughter's not able to do anything because of the sickness that she's having? Of worrying about the children. What can the grandmother do? Because the grandmother has been to the police, she wrote to Minister Bekele, she went to social development, she went to everyone to assist her, but no one is assisting her. What else can she do to make sure that she gets the children back? Because no one is taking her serious. Thank you. Thank you, Polly. Yes, I just want other questions have been asked by honourable members, but I'm also thinking about Father for Justice that were crying because of the court orders that they are having court orders, and they are not sure exactly what is it that we are amending on the bill, on the children's bill, because there is a clause that is talking about the responsibility by the father, which was not there before, but you get most of the fathers crying. Otherwise, the other second question that I was going to ask, I think Jane has already highlighted it in terms of the court order that goes to a mother of a child, and the mother of a child then had a depression and because of the abuse, but now she is recovering, okay, she has recovered, but she is unable to get access to the child. What is it that is supposed to happen? It's been quite a long time, this lady crying to us, checking on how and where can she go with this. Thanks. I will give over to the department to assist us. If there's anything that they need to respond in written way, we are able to get that, but we are free to wait for the correct responses on this. Thank you very much. Over to you, the department.
Thank you once again, Honourable Chair. I will start by mentioning, Honourable Chair, that the department has not become privy to the list of issues that came forward during the public hearings. All that we have before us is the letter dated the 17th of February 2022, which listed the issues that we have dealt with in our presentation. However, we will respond at an opportune time to any additional information that is required from the department in writing. Then I will zoom into the questions that were asked by the various members. Applications for guardianship. In the Act, as it currently stands, indeed, Section 45(3) limits guardianship applications to only the High Court and Divorce Court when they are hearing a divorce. So, High Court applications, yes, are well known to be intricate and forcing people to acquire the services of legal representatives who charge fees. And the charging of fees is regulated by the Legal Practice Council because they are currently the body that is regulating the entire legal profession in respect of both the advocates and the attorneys. Then following that was a question on a protection of privacy of children. Section 6 of the Divorce Act, as it stands now, protects the publication of identities or any particulars that can reveal the identity of a child in a matter. And there is a constitutional court case which has also sought to take it further and protect the identity of children even more. I apologize, Honorable Chair. I do not have the citation of the case at hand, but the Constitutional Court has made a pronouncement on that. But currently in legislation, we just have the Divorce Act that is protecting children. Right. The question on Section 21A, I didn't get quite clearly, but I will attempt to answer it to the extent that I understood it with the certificate of outcome. Section 21 of the Children's Act pertains to unwed fathers, the children or fathers of children born out of wedlock. The first part of Section 21 says the family advocate and other classes of persons, social workers or other suitably qualified persons, should make a determination taking into account the circumstances of the parties, whether the father has met the criteria that is listed. For instance, has taken a bona fide effort to become involved in the upbringing of the child, or has been contributing in good faith to the financial expenses of the child, or has paid damages in terms of African customary law. And once a father is found to have met that criterion, then he is deemed to have acquired full parental responsibilities and rights. Then the next step is the determination of how to exercise those parental responsibilities and rights. And that is where mainly the conflict arises. And that is where one finds that the courts need to be involved. Then the family advocate will start by attempting in terms of Section 33 to assist the parties to come up with a parenting plan. Should the family advocate not be successful in getting the parties to enter into a parenting plan, then we issue the parties with a certificate of outcome so that the matter can get rechanneled to litigation in the children's court. Then the children's court readily knows that mediation was attempted and the matter was not settled. Therefore, it is a matter that requires adjudication within the litigation context. So it is not yet applicable to moms. It is a section that makes provision for the parental responsibilities and rights of fathers of children that were born out of wedlock. In instances where a mom is deceased, there's Section 33 and other subsequent sections after Section 21 that we can assist them, because the Children's Act is so broadly worded that we can also bring people on in terms of parental responsibilities and rights agreements, which can in certain instances confer interested parties with rights that they would that they did not automatically have. So the Section 21 does exclude mothers, but mothers are not left without the recourse. They've got other sections that they can resort to. Then the next question is the capacity in the Office of the Family Advocate. It is indeed so, Honorable Chair, that the Office of the Family Advocate is quite overstretched. We have been carrying a backlog of approximately 3,500 cases when we opened this current financial year, which is about to end, and the reports for February indicating that we will be carrying a similar load of backlog into the next financial year. However, Honorable Chair, the efforts that we are taking to alleviate the backlog. The backlog alleviation is going to be in our branch operational plan in the next financial year. The legislation that I have referred to in my presentation, which created the Family Advocate, which is the Mediation in Certain Divorce Matters Act, allows for the appointment of ad hoc practitioners. It empowers the Minister of Justice to appoint family advocates and family counselors on an ad hoc basis. So we are setting aside money, and we are reviewing the tariffs so that they become market related. We have reviewed them a long time ago already. We are getting them to become market related so that we can attract practitioners that can come in and assist us with the backlog. So we are really hoping to dent the backlog. We are also exploring opportunities for overtime to be employed by our own officials in addition to the appointment of ad hocs to bring down the backlog that we have, because we are very, very sensitive to the fact that, you know, justice delayed for a child could harm the welfare of a child for a very long time. Then the other question was came with regards to the standardization of fees of practitioners, because they charge exorbitant fees. The standardization and the determination of fees of practitioners is the purview of the Legal Practice Council, which has now taken charge of both the arms of the profession. However, the legal aid that can assist indigent parents that cannot afford those fees, and those that qualify for the legal aid threshold, that can assist parents free of charge. And also, the courts can appoint a pro bono legal representation. That the number of hours that practitioners must give back free of charge that they can assist people with. There is a probono.org which parties can go to see if they can also receive legal assistance without having to pay for it. The next question was directed to DSD. I'll skip that. And then the question that the department can answer is the one, children automatically go to the mother. I wish to emphasize, Honorable Chair, that every case is determined by its own merits. There is no blanket decision making. And the decision making, as I indicated in the presentation, goes through at least three levels. The parties get seen, then a family counselor goes and does a forensic investigation, which includes speaking to collaterals and seeking evidence otherwise of school teachers or whoever may become relevant in the determination, and put it together in a report. And then the family advocate comes in and applies the applicable law to the findings of the social worker and makes a recommendation to court. Then the matter gets heard before the court. The evidence of witnesses can be adduced, witnesses can be cross-examined for the judicial officer to get to the root of the matter. It is not as simplistic as perhaps the public perceives it to be. The outcome of a case goes through a number of levels of scrutiny before a conclusion is reached. The issue of people perjuring themselves before the family advocate. The family advocate consults with the parties. We do not take statements under oath. Where there is a dispute of facts or a dispute in any of the merits, it gets reported in the office of in the report of the family advocate, because the dispute must be tested in court, and that is why the family advocate can appear in court to adduce evidence and to cross-examine witness. So in any matter, there can be three lawyers, the family advocate becoming the third one to come and lead evidence, cross-examination, and that, so that then the testimony that happens in court happens under oath. And that is the point at which the offense of perjury can be determined, whether it is taking place or not. Then the last question, Honorable Chair, relates to parental alienation being declared an act of child abuse. This term, parental alienation, is a term that one encounters in the circles of clinical psychology. And the psychologists that we have spoken to have indicated that it is quite a difficult concept to deal with. It has not been classified as a syndrome. It has not been classified as a mental illness. It is a concept out there. I see it personally a lot in the American family law, but it is a concept which is still very, very, very elusive. What parents perceive is, when social workers look at the developmental needs of a child, the history of the child's care comes into play. The parents that has been hands-off prior to the separation with regard to the care of the child will obviously not have established as strong a bond as the other parent. Now, when the scales get tipped in favor of the parent that has always been hands-on, then it is perceived as bias in favor of that parent. And it can be any parent for that matter. We have made recommendations to either gender of parents. We have made recommendations in respect of same-sex parenting. A parent is but a parent. We do not look at the gender of a parent. What determines is, I'm sure there are a lot of social workers in this meeting. The social workers will ask a child, when you fall, who do you run to? And then the child will say, mommy. When you come to school, who gives you lunch? Mommy. Who baths you in the morning? Mommy. Or whoever parent does those things. And the age of a child, you see, it's a child of tender age who requires that kind of level of care. Then the scales will become tipped in favor of that parent. And unfortunately for us, the the other parent will perceive it as bias. But fortunately, Madam Honorable Chair, the department has declared 2022 the year of the community. We will put our energy, a lot of it, into community awareness raising and calling on also for co-parenting and shared parenting and encouraging parents to become involved with their children early on in the children's lives, so that when separation, divorce or breakdown happens, then the two parents come in on equal footing. Then, you know, when one does a parenting plan, the parents are able to be allocated equal roles, rather than having to determine the one that was more involved with the child and the other one being less involved with the child. I think we will take it that far, Honorable Chair, and thank you once again for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Maybe it's also wise to get your number, so that if we've got any issues that would like to get clarity on them, we are able to just communicate direct with you. I don't think it will harm you in terms of that, because
not at all.
That are being, yes, there are cases that are being reported to us, where to go, and they come to us as people that are serving in the social development committee, and we don't have answers, especially this one that we are talking. It is on a high level. It's not easy to understand the sections and all those stuff, but if we keep on communicating with you, I think you will be of assistance. Thank you very much for... Okay, I see the hand of... because is there any other hand? Yes.
Yes, I want to say something.
Okay. You'll say something after Honorable Jane. Jane, is it an old hand or?
She can say it, but it's not the old hand. Okay.
It's a new hand. Né?
Yes.
Let me give you first, because your hand was up first, and then give Honorable Bilangulu. Gizela, it's an old hand, I suppose.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yes, I'm listening. Over to you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for also asking the contact, where we can contact them, because of that question that I raised, I didn't get it well. If I did, it means those people those women who doesn't have money, always they won't get to see their own child. Because Mina, I thought, as they're also dealing with this family cause or whatever, maybe I was going to get the assistance. Especially, it's not the issue of culture, because we represent black and white. So I don't want to say in this, I'm saying that woman is white. No, I just seek the clarity, so that I must be also able to clarify that particular woman. So this thing of numbers, section, what, I didn't get it clear. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mangai. I think she also made mention that she doesn't have the case number so as to be able to answer us. Let's say Honorable Mangani give her an opportunity and forward to her the case number, so that she can be able to also assist us. Yeah, you are right by saying she couldn't get into the deep details of assisting us on how to answer those. Can we then give over to Honorable Ilankulu?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't raise my hand in the first place because the issue that I wanted to raise is the one that we have just concluded with. Honorable Mangani said, and yourselves has raised the issue of getting contact from the advocate. There are a lot of issues that are happening, more especially when it comes to GBF. And most of the issues are being raised to the multi-party women caucus. So I think it would be good for us to raise these issues, whether we're going to raise it when we are in the Portfolio Committee for Social Development or in the caucus, in the women caucus. Two issues. The one that Honorable Mangani raised of KC in Gauteng. I think the advocate really didn't answer it deeply so. But I think because we do have some of the information as multi-party, we'll forward the case or the issues revolving that, and also to give the contact number of the lady that Honorable Mangani was talking about. The other one is for Ambassador Advocate Kumutsile. I think this lady has got a case hanging in the court of law for more than 3 years. She's been taken pillar to post because of the issue of GBV. It's like there are people who are known to those that are serving in court. So this woman is just taken pillar to post. She has forwarded information to the secretary of the multi-party. I think by getting those numbers, we'll be able to forward it to her also. Because really, we cannot say we are doing justice. Meanwhile, women also are still oppressing other women. Cases are not being handled in a correct manner, or the cases are not dealt accordingly in most of our courts in South Africa. Advocate, you need to know that. You need to bear that in mind in order to deal with the issues, because people are looking at us or are watching that really we are not doing justice. Women, where they are supposed to be comforted or where they are supposed to get help, they are failing to get that. And if it's in the court of law, where are they going to run to? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Kate. I think the advocate has agreed to give us the number, and he must also give us the second number so that if we are unable to get hold of her, we can also refer our issues to the next person who is closer to her. Yoli?
Okay, thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity. I just wanted to explain and something that Honorable Masango has made an observation on, Chair, regarding the some issues that were not responded to or presented in the presentation from the Department of Justice. I just want to maybe say, Chair, if you remember, our process is a bit skewed now. Last week, we were supposed to have a briefing from the sponsor of the bill, which is DSD. And that presentation would have covered all the inputs that were made by members of the public, both provincially and nationally, and the submissions as well that were received. So that now meeting was rescheduled for the 16th. So I spoke to Sis Lindy to get a sense of the procedure, how we should go forward with this, because if the presentation had taken place and then the members felt like there are some issues that maybe they are not satisfied with, we could have quickly contacted the Department of Justice to say, what is now your input on this issue? But now the department as a sponsor of the bill, that is DSD, must first respond to all of those proposed amendments that were made in responding to the bill that they tabled in Parliament. So having said that, Chair, then the committee, unfortunately, it will have that opportunity on the 16th with the department. So after that meeting or after the deliberations and the committee feels that the justice must still come back maybe and give their inputs on what is proposed by the Department of Social Development, there's nothing stopping the committee to invite the Department of Justice again to come and give their view on what is proposed by DSD and the members of the public. That's what I wanted to explain, but the observation by Mamu Masango is valid too.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Yoli. Yes, of course, it's like that, really. We have put the cart in front of the horses for now, but it doesn't spoil most of other things. If the departments, both Home Affairs and Justice, because we requested them to also do the written answers on few things that haven't been answered. So we will allow that maybe on the 16th to get the responses. It will also assist us and try to make things easier for the DSD for that 16th. I think for now, I don't see any other hand except to say we have to thank, or maybe advocate, do you have anything to say for now? Just as a closing. Advocate.
Sorry, I was still muted. Okay. There isn't much to say, Honorable Chair, except to profusely thank you and members of the committee. We remain available to respond to any of the questions that pertain to the department. And if I am in order, Honorable Chair, I can right now give my contact number and then I'll give my full contact details to our parliamentary liaison officer to send to your committee. My mobile number is 082-922-5445.
Can you repeat yourself, ma'am?
082.
Yes.
922.
Yes.
5445. Yeah, then the specific cases that were raised during this meeting, Honorable Chair, perhaps can become resolved when we become armed with the full set of facts and the merits of the case. Because it's difficult if we are just sitting without the information.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Advocate. Don't you have a second person? Because at times you are busy, at times you are in court, etc. Don't you have an alternative one?
Perhaps I will ask Advocate Kambula to give her contact numbers as well, because we work quite closely on issues of women and children.
Yes, that will assist us. Advocate Kambula, your number.
Thank you, Chair. It is 084.
Yes.
084-702-7122.
Yes.
I would also like just to say.
No, no. Can you repeat yourself, Advocate?
It is
084-702-7122.
Okay. May I also just to apprise the committee that the Department of Social Development is sitting in a number of structures that deal with issues that relate to the protection of the rights of children, which are chaired by the Department of Justice. So we have the full participation of your department. And also, there is one committee as well, which is called the Directors General Intersectoral Committee on the Management of Sexual Offences, where matters, where then also the Department of Social Development is part of, and is also submitting reports, annual reports to Parliament via our minister. So what I would like just to say is that we have a wealth of and a rich relationship with the Department of Social Development in a number of issues, including with the implementation of the Children's Act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate. Honourable members, it seems as if either your hand is up. I didn't want to give you DST because you still have an opportunity, or you must go into it. I can't close you out. Let me give you to say something. Thank you. Over to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much, Peterson. And let me appreciate the time that has been given to DFC. And also, indeed, I want to emphasize the fact that we're working very well, you know, with the Department of Justice and other government departments in relation to issues that affect children. And we are together trying to find, you know, solutions in terms of the challenges that we are experiencing.
Chair, volume, please.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I was just saying that we are working very well with the Department of Justice and other government departments because of the intersectoral nature of issues of children that we are dealing with. And I also want to appreciate all the issues that have been raised that relates to the Department of Social Development, and to say that we commit as the department that we will submit, you know, the responses in writing. We've been submitting, we've got a report on especially on foster care that we are submitting on quarterly basis, you know, to the court, but we're also submitting to CCL, and we will be able to submit also to the portfolio committee to members. Thank you very much, members, for having us. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Isabel. For now, the time, I think, it allows us to close the meeting, and we are just on time. So thank you. I would like to thank everyone who has managed to attend the meeting and deliberate in the discussions. I think so far so good. It's not as we came to the meeting. There is a clear direction on how going forward, on how to go forward in terms of the questions that were asked by the communities. Thanks ever so much for everyone who has managed to attend the meeting. Let me request you to close the meeting if there is anything. Is there anything, Van Hennen? Hermin, are you still in the meeting? No one. Okay, it's fine. The meeting has adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much.
Recording stopped.